This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the Gala iFanboy Pick a Week Podcast Extravaganza, episode number 150, sponsored by eMusic and Netflix, and iFanboy.
Wow. I mean, wow.
I'm tired already.
iFanboy Pick of the Week Podcast, episode 150.
I apologize to everybody with loudspeakers.
Sorry, my name is Ron, and I'm here with
Connor.
I'm Josh. I'm going to temper your exuberance with
just downtroddenness. Well, anyway, yeah. If this is your first experience, you're listening to a podcast from the website ifanboy.com, which is with the three of us as well as some other folks who help us out manage or do. And that's a website dedicated to comics where we read comics and we read a lot of the comics that come out every week. And then one of us picks the one that we deem the pick of the week. And we write a review about it on ifanboy.com, then come here to talk about it, as well as all the other comics and other stuff that, you know, in the world of comic books that comes out. And before we get started, just a quick kind of warner for anybody. warning.
Jack Warner. Started the studio in 1930.
A quick warner. This is a review show, so we're going to be talking about the comic book that came out this week that was the pick of the week, or books. But we're going to talk about what happened in it. So if you haven't read them, then you might want to pause. And we're also going to be talking about comics in general. So if you're afraid of being things spoiled, just be careful. And disclaimer, it's not our fault.
I don't like have people talk about comics in case they spoil something I haven't read or didn't even know about. But in the course of telling me about a book, you tell me a little bit of the plot, it's ruined. Spoiled.
But before we get started, my exuberance is because it is our 150th episode. And Connor, what does that mean?
That means we're breaking our normal format. And we're going to talk about the pick of the week and a couple of the other books. And then we're going to go right into answering listener email. We're going to answer in a much longer show, a lot of email.
This episode is dedicated to you, the member of the iFan base who we do this every week for.
So if this is your first episode, normally we talk about the books of the week, you know, 8 or 9 books, and we do a couple of emails, a couple of voicemails, and get on out of here. But this time, it's a different kind of format. We'll return to the normal format next week. Don't worry.
Don't worry. It'll be fine. We get self-indulgent once in a while, and that's it. And this is self-indulgent.
About every 50 episodes.
Yeah, just about. To be honest. Just about. This week, Josh had the pick, and it was Invincible number 52. And at that point, Connor, we're going to bid you adieu.
Goodbye.
And that's because Connor reads Invincible in trades, and...
Nancy, that's his problem.
Before I hand the mic over to Josh, I want to point out that Invincible number 42, I switched to issues, and both Connor and Josh gave me a lot of shit for doing that. And
I would like you to go back to the tape and prove that what I said.
Oh, totally can go back to the tape. I'm going to read it in trade. I'll never read this in issues, and blah, 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 blah. I have the emails. And now here we are 10 issues later, and it's your pick of the week, Josh. Explain yourself.
All right. I'm not going to get in a fight with you over this.
No, I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to fight over it. No, I'm kidding. Well, I was so delighted to see that you picked Invincible number 52. I really hope Connor's not with us anymore.
We didn't check. We just assume he left. He's listening right now, crying. No, stop talking. Stop talking. We put glue on his headphones, and he doesn't know it. And he has no idea how to use volume. It can't work. These buttons. Okay, I read up through the last Invincible trade, which went through number 47, I believe.
Okay.
And then the big issue of 50 came out, and I thought, eh, I can probably find 48 and 49 somewhere. So I bought 50, and then I bought 51, and then I decided I couldn't find 48 and 49, and I said, screw it, and I read them anyway. Which brought me to 52, which is my first sort of regular issue that I bought the week it came out and read it that week.
You popped a cherry!
Ew!
Ew! I'm sorry, ew. It's a carryover from last week.
And it was also in the video show from last week, too.
Oh, it was. Right, it was. Yeah.
And, you know, what's funny is that this week, it should be noted that it's actually a real shame that we're doing the show like this because
yeah.
It was an incredibly stupid good week.
It was stupid.
I had about 10 or more books or so, and, like, not a one of them was less than 4 stars on the 5-star iFanboy rating scale. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I enjoyed everything I read this week. And this is actually the last book that I read because I have a sixth sense about these things. Basically, okay, here's you got your spoiler warning, but this is your super spoiler warning. If you thought we weren't serious, we are. When Kid Omni-Man bursts through the Mauler, is it Mauler clone?
Let me look in the issue.
The bad guy.
Yeah.
When he bursts through the bad guy.
Mauler brother, the Mauler brother.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. I mean, I it was a great, great, great comic book moment.
You know what it was? And it's funny because it's likened, and I believe you likened to it in the review of the moment when, like, things with Invincible's father, with Omni-Man, hit the fan for the first time.
Yeah.
And it's been a while since we've had this kind of jerk your head in the opposite direction, oh my God, moment for Invincible. And this is just a reminder of that Kirkman will do that to you and how awesome it is when that happens.
Well, you know, the thing is that he set us up with, oh, 50 is the one where everything's going to change. And then 51 is the one where he gets a new costume. And so you're like, okay, now we're going to – so that was the change and we're settling into the status quo. And he totally like out of all the problems that Mark has been having, this is not the one that was on your horizon. It was like all – the whole last few issues have been like this, look over here, and yeah. Then bam.
Yep.
And then a page and a half later, he does it again.
That was great. Was the doing yeah. it again with going back to the well was just genius. Because he's just and like then, he did it, and he's like, I'm sorry, I didn't know. And then it does it again. It was awesome. It was great. So
and that's even that's enough. And then the conversation that follows, the actual human relationship drama of Mark and Oliver. By the way, you did notice that he's named Oliver, like the kid from the Brady Bunch who ruined that show when he showed up.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was obvious. I mean, that was yeah. – I mean, because the part of also like which we discussed Jesus maybe 130 episodes ago, all the trades of Invincible are named after sitcoms. Right. So there's a subtle sitcom thread throughout Invincible, which is kind of interesting.
Nice.
But yeah.
But sort of the conversation that follows that is really disturbing. Like if you place yourself in Invincible Mark Grayson's shoes – what he's supposed to do with this situation, like what can he do?
Right.
And then at the end, there's like the little hint that maybe he feels the same way. Maybe his Viltrumitism is a little stronger than.
Right. Than anything. Than yeah. Because so basically what happens is that, you know, like they go to fight the Mauler brothers and Invincible gets knocked out of the way. And Kid Omni-Man goes crazy and doesn't go crazy, but just kills them. And then Invincible grabs them and they fly up. I liked how when what's his name? The dude, the Cecil guy. Cecil and the other heroes show up and Invincible shows up and gets all mad. He's like, leave my brother alone. And he's like, Sky. And they just fly up. Like, I like how they have this whole kind of – they can just go up, which is kind of cool. I like that. But they have this lot of kind of talking to and the kid is – you know, kid is screaming saying, you know, why was what I did wrong? And they were going to hurt people and I just took care of it. And Mark's trying to explain that we don't kill and we're heroes. The Kid Omni-Man's explaining what he thought, and Mark says, you kind of sound like Dad. And he's like, well, maybe he was right. And it just ends on that little cliffhanger, that little zoom in on Invincible's mouth going, you know, maybe, you know, sometimes. Like he's like, don't you ever think Dad might be right? And he's like, sometimes. So
yeah.
It was I thought it was really well done. It ended on a really strong note.
I just didn't see any of this coming. And you're like, I probably should have. It seems like a completely obvious choice, which I call that a Jeff Johns move. but it was just so what's good about this book. Yeah. Like when it just, you know, rips you in a different direction that you weren't expecting. And again, I would be totally remiss. Ryan Ottley.
Yeah. Well, before we get to, okay. Let's talk about the art. Ryan Ottley is great, but this Foucault Placenicia, the new colorist or whatever his name is. I thought the colors were noticeably great in this issue.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah,
they were. I think that the new costumes work really well, and there's a sort of interesting color palette on this that's a little brighter and a little less shaded, I guess.
It's like no other comic book I read right now visually, I think. And it's a combination of Otley's art and the coloring, and that it's, you know, it's a very bright superhero book, but the kid's covered in blood.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's, I mean, that's one thing that Ottley seems to be really good at, oddly enough, is really gory shit.
Yeah, yeah. When he punches through the brothers and goes right through their head, that was awesome.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing is I noticed reading this, just because I'd been spending so much time looking at Kirby stuff and reading about him lately, is that all of that Kirby, like, flying off the page, punching off the page at the reader, that is all right here in these pages.
Totally.
And I hadn't ever noticed it, but if you look, they're coming at you.
Yep.
And like they're just like Invincible and Kid Omni-Man, they're just slightly coming out of the panels and they're just leaving their boundaries a little bit.
Yeah.
And you'll notice that all over the place in this book. And it's subtle, but it just gives it this incredible energy.
Yeah. What I also thought was interesting is how the look of the book has evolved, and it's gotten very subtly elegant, you know, and specifically like the use of speed lines. In this issue, like if you notice, like the speed, there are like manga-esque speed lines all over the place. Like anytime there's movement or flying or somebody getting thrown or anything like that, there are those little speed lines that and they're done, you know, it's obviously digital, like they're obviously done digitally, but they're done so well that, or maybe they're not done digitally, I don't know, what the fuck do I know? But it really makes it work, but they stay within the panels, and it's I think it's great to see this book go from issue one with Corey Walker and then bring on Ottley, and then seeing how Ottley has evolved as an artist, I think is really, really impressive.
I'd struggle to think of a sort of superhero, a guy who's doing superheroes as cleanly and as energetically as Ottley.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's just so good. And every, like, literally, I'm flipping through this book right now, and on every page I'm seeing something that's impressing me.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, sort of the foreground and background perspectives that he's putting in the pages, or, you know, the double page spread of the Mahler brothers with all the sort of downed heroes around them. That's an awesome page.
Yep.
And even the background is impressive.
Yeah.
This is just, and it's not phoned in anywhere. And maybe the dude takes a little bit longer. That's fine.
Yeah. Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. So now that you're off trades, I mean, you haven't really dealt with a really long delay in between issues or anything like that, but how does it read an issue? Because we always say Invincible is great and it was made for reading in trade. And that was my experiment was I'm going to read in issues and see how it reads. And so I'm curious what you thought.
This one read really well. The last couple, they were fine. One was a double-sized issue or whatever. So that's what 50 was. And then 51, I mean, not a lot happened in those, I guess.
Yeah.
This one, it read extremely fast. Not as fast as Walking Dead reads.
Right.
Walking Dead's like, flip, flip, oh, what happened? I mean, and you don't really feel shorted, but this one, this was a really satisfying issue. I don't know. I haven't been on long enough to tell you, but I know fair enough. Reading the trades goes really fast too, but well, God, what incredible issue.
It's nice to see after 150 episodes now, we can see Invincible get the pick of the week, and after years of people yelling us because we read in trades and that it deserved to be the pick of the week and stuff like that, now we just got to figure out how to get Walking Dead in a pick of the week sooner or later.
I'm reading Walking Dead in issues. Well, could happen.
It could happen. You never know.
Could happen.
All right, excellent. So anything else to say on Invincible 52, Josh? Or?
Anything that we can ruin for Connor when he comes back.
Oh, that's a good
idea. I think we're covered, but seriously, there is not a better superhero book. So I know there's people out there who only read Marvel or DC or whatever. This book is so worth, if you like superheroes, there's literally no reason to not read this. Even if, especially if you've read Kirkman's Marvel work and you didn't really like it that much, it's still not a reason not to read this book.
Yeah, no, read this. You need, if you like superheroes, you need to be reading this book.
There's not a better one.
Yep. All right, excellent. Well, let's get Connor back.
Bring back big man.
I am back.
And we're back.
Did you hear any of that?
I heard none of it. I was off having a meeting with a new potential sponsor.
Oh, excellent. How did it go?
With La Cerveza del Pacifico.
Excellent.
It's muy bueno.
All All right. Well, so we had promised. We said that we were only going to talk about the pick of the week, and we were going to dive into the emails. But I'm screwing things up, and the week was so good, and I didn't think that we should really not address talking about Secret Invasion number 6.
Ooh.
Did you not like it?
I gave it a 2 out of 5.
Wow, and I gave it a 5 out of 5.
Yeah.
Josh, where do you fit in the middle?
4.
4?
I went with 4.
Yeah. Here's basically what got it for me. Well, first off, if you open – so Secret Invasion number 6, finally, you know, they're out of the Savage Land, and they kind of finally square off – the heroes finally square off with the Skrulls in New York City and Central Park. There were two moments in this that kind of gave me chills. Was that in the first like 6 pages or so, when the Skrulls are talking to Spider-Woman and they're talking about how Reed Richards escaped, and the one Skrull says, "It's always Richards." I kind of giggled because that's my name. And I pretended it was me. No, basically the addition of Bucky as Cap and Thor, and then the Avengers Assemble moment right before it, when the Spider-Woman Skrull is talking about God has brought them to save them, and Nick Fury just says, "Yeah, well, my God has a hammer." And then the big Avengers Assemble, and then the two double page spreads, I took it hook, line, and sinker. That said, looking at it in the past couple of days, I see some flaws.
Oh, sure. my biggest problem was it is none of it's been earned. I mean, there were great moments in it, but I should be all pumped up by the last double page spread of all the double page spreads in that issue. But yeah, it wasn't, because it wasn't earned. You know, it just sort of happened. There was no progression. We just sort of out of the Savage Land, big fight.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's funny is that this is still a setup issue.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That's why I gave it 2, because it's still.
Yeah.
That's true. However, and also they completely and totally wrecked Taskmaster's costume, and he can't fly. But yeah, whatever.
Yeah, last page of the issue, in the upper right-hand corner, you see Taskmaster flying. Unless that's not Taskmaster, but I'm pretty sure it is.
What's that going to be? However, for me, and this is totally lame, but the best moment in this, Spider-Man. So anyone in the mood to hit Denny's on the way home?
Yeah, that was good.
Luke, yep. Jokes? Really? Come on, it was barely a joke, Luke. for whatever reason, like, everybody nailed like the balloon placements and the timing. That joke worked really well.
Yeah, it did. It really did. Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was great. I mean, I read it in the store because I was so excited because it came out, and maybe because I'm the Marvel zombie and I want it to be good. My problems with it were my two problems I did have, and giving it a 5 probably was too generous, but I thought, you know, Lionel Yu's art is starting to get strained. I think mainly in a lot of the lack of detail in the big spreads. Although Howard the Duck is hiding in Stature's boob on the third to last page. Also, one of my concerns was the gathering with having Bucky, Cap, and Thor arrive. Like, it was like I turned the page and they're there waiting for them. It's like, how did they know? You know, it just seemed a little contrived. But other than that, it was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, use art. There's a lot of ink on the page.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a lot of work to do.
Let's just say he's no Perez.
I think he did a damn fine job.
Yeah.
I think some of the character designs in the big splashes were off for whatever reason. Like, maybe he wasn't as familiar with those characters.
Floating Norman Osborn head. But if you flip
through these pages, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, there is.
He had his work cut out for him. I mean, that's a lot of characters. So
yeah.
I'll let him pass on that.
Yeah, I don't know. Secret Invasion is just it's, you know, 2 issues and then we're done. And then this whole embrace change thing comes upon us. So we'll see what that means. But goddamn, it was a great week for books between, you know, Criminal and Booster Gold and Pax Romana and all this kind of stuff. So make sure you go to ifanboy.com/comics and read everybody's user reviews and see what everybody thought of all the comics that came out.
Cotter, and pick your pick of the week.
Yeah, exactly. Josh and I were talking while you were talking to the La Cerveza people. That it was just a ridiculous week of books, and I didn't know if you agreed or not.
It was a pretty strong week, that's for sure.
Yeah,
some really, really good reads in there.
Yeah, awesome. All right, well, enough about comics. Whatever.
We're
not
still
stopping comics. Yeah.
Oh, I thought we were talking. Okay, anyway.
We got 15 pages of comic book emails here.
So we've asked you to send in your questions, and here they are. And so are we going to dive in?
Let's preface this by saying we're not going to get everyone's question in. There's just too many. So we're sorry if we didn't get to your question. We will each email you back directly. But
there was a lot of questions.
You want to do this Bendis tape style? We'll just put out 74 hours of us talking about ourselves.
No, I don't.
I don't think anybody wants that.
Unless someone wants to come edit that for us. All right. Our first email is from Eric from Texas, and he says, "Name a current comic you read that the other two iFanboys don't."
All right. Josh?
Abel's, okay. Hellblazer.
Nice.
Many, many books.
Maybe. There's a lot of books that we read no one else amongst the three of us read. Like, I read Green Lantern Corps, which you guys really should read, just being big Green Lantern fans. Yeah. Birds of Prey. There's other books.
I mean, for me, it's probably anything with an X on it. You know, like
regular.
Like Young X-Men and X-Men Legacy and all this kind of stuff. But also, you know, also little things. Like, I mean, am I the only one reading I Kill Giants from Image that came out this week? You know, like there's the little things here and there that, you know, Helen Keller.
That's sicko.
Young Liars, which by the way, Young Liars went off the rails this week.
I heard.
Oh, I was just like, oh god, there's the left turn.
I knew it was coming. I was like, you're not getting me, buddy. He's too many times. Yeah. Him and Joe Straczynski, back up.
Yeah, no, we don't all read the same stuff. Okay.
That way we can cover the field.
Yeah. All right, next question comes from A. Devlin, who wants to know, have any of us had the opportunity to check out the Watchmen motion comic on iTunes? I found the first chapter captivating. I imagine Mr. Moore himself would approve of this production. Are we seeing a new trend in comic booking?
You are wrong.
No, he wouldn't. It doesn't even matter. It could be the greatest thing on God's green earth, and he'd be like, I don't like it.
He's not even going to watch it. He doesn't even know, whatever.
No.
I thought it was really cool. My only problem was with the voices.
I didn't watch it, so what were they like?
Well, no, they had one guy. It was like an audiobook. And so the one dude did all the voices, including the chicks.
Was it Roger Slattery?
I don't know who it was.
It was that would be awesome. I read it. I mean, I watched it or whatever, but I was like, what's the point?
Right.
It was the comic book page, and they made it move around a little bit.
Well, the thing is, I mean, and this
– better than the Invincible one.
I wrote an article on myfanboy.com about this a couple of weeks ago about this new trend of motion comics or whatever they are, you know, where like within the Invincible comic came out, which was just basically taking panels from Invincible and kind of moving around, and this Watchmen one was similar to that. I don't know. I mean, you know, like it's not better than the comic, but if it grabs someone's attention and then they go check out the comic, then cool. You know, I mean,
yes.
I mean, maybe.
But being a huge comic book snob, I mean, The Watchmen's about being a comic book, and especially when you get to the point where you're showing the images from it, the juxtaposition of those images and the way that those pages look is for a reason. So yeah.
The movie adaptation's one thing, but making it a visual comic is another.
Yeah.
I mean, but I did give it a shot. I tried to watch it. It wasn't offensive, but I didn't really see the point, I guess. But a lot of people seem to like it, so whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's totally marketing for the movie, so I mean, that's obvious. But
you like it?
He sounds like a freaking.
I can't do him.
I know you can't. It sounds like a World of Warcraft character.
Neil Appeal is very appealing. We keep hearing from about all the talented creators that Marvel is picking up. They got Matt Fraction, they got Jason Aaron, they got Jonathan Hickman and Rick Remender. But what we really hear about is DC picking up new talents, which is troubling me. Who should they be hiring? What books do you think they should be put on?
That's a very good point.
Well, Jonathan Hickman and Remender aren't exclusive Marvel. Remender's doing Booster Gold.
True, yeah. Remender is working at DC.
But other than that, I mean,
other than that, they got nothing.
Yeah. Other than that, I mean, like, and I'm not trying to take work away from Paul Dini, but I mean, put Jason Aaron on Detective Comics or something like that.
Right.
Oh,
well,
God, yes. After that Penguin he did.
He would smoke that book.
Well, I mean, it's funny because DC had a couple of them. I mean, because DC snatched McKeever away from Marvel, but that hasn't been of the Aaron, you know.
He's not, level. I mean, all due respect to McKeever, whose work I like, he's not of that level.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's not yet.
Not yet.
They got a bunch of guys like McKeever and Tony Bedard and the guys that are at that like emerging level, but not at that breakout level yet. And they're just all the big guys. They're going to Marvel. The money. I mean,
well, it's fine. No, but it's really funny though because you know Fraction, Aaron, Hickman, Remender to us are big guys, but to the industry and everybody else, they're not yet.
No, but they are emerging new talent, and I can tell you that at least
they're critical
two of those,
talent.
Yeah.
Two of those guys in 4 or 5 years are going to be.
Bendis.
You know, Brubaker. You know, Fraction is pretty close to being at that level at this point now, for whatever reason. Like really running the show.
Nice. And, way to subtly dig at him for whatever reason.
No, I haven't been a huge fan. That's not a big surprise. I think he's getting better. I absolutely think he's getting better.
Yep.
For a long time, Matt Fraction focused a lot on being weird for weird's sake, and I think that he's really hunkered down a lot.
Yeah,
and,
I think.
And gotten better.
I mean, honestly, it's funny because you know we talk. You know, there's a lot of talk about working for Marvel and DC versus doing creator-owned stuff and stuff like that. And you know, Fraction got his start doing weird kind of indie books. And I think that working for a company like Marvel is probably going to be the best decision he made in his career because I think it's going to make him a better writer in general.
to have constraints.
Yeah, exactly.
And remember, Brubaker wasn't Brubaker for a while.
No.
He did a
no.
lot of – even when he was writing Batman, he wasn't Brubaker.
Yeah.
No.
You know, he wasn't – you know, these guys take a while to become the big names, but DC is definitely lagging behind in terms of getting the critical acclaimed writers on there.
And you know what's funny is that, like, Jeff Johns, who's their biggest guy, he's not flashy.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't see him doing lots of podcasts and talking lots of stuff and being out there and, like
– he just works.
He just works, and
he's writing 45 books.
He's a good earner. He's a good earner.
The works again with the mafia, but like even his books aren't flashy. They just go. They just work. They're like I don't know. I lost my metaphor.
Well, no, but the thing about Johns though is I think Johns is of the top five writers right now, if not one of the top three or two.
I would like to see what else he can do.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I know I'm going off the question, but if you go from a writing standpoint, I think it's Johns and Bendis are the two best writers in comics right now.
Brubaker might have something to say about that.
He's a nice number three.
And from a market standpoint, I don't think you can ignore Mark Miller either.
True. Good
no.
point. Very good point.
And he comes on a book, whether you like his stuff or not, like he's got to be top three biggest names.
Yeah. I always laugh whenever I see when I look in Wizard, I see the Wizard top 10 artists, which they still do. Or top ten writers
they still
and artists.
Have the same pictures.
No, they still have the same pictures. But like Alex Ross was like the number 9 top writer.
What?
Because he was writing Justice or like co-plotting. Like it was just so such a bullshit. I'm sorry, I don't mean to bash on Wizard, but it was just like
Terrence from Fort Worth writes in and says, "Did you see the poster by DC with 11 women titled 'Where the Real Power Lies'? Batwoman. What am I missing? That should have been Huntress. What do you think the equivalent would be in Marvel?" That's a nerdy ass comic book question.
So what is it? So the Adam Hughes picture of women.
Yes.
And they show Batwoman and not Huntress. So it's what kind of character? So is the question what character gets featured that should be another character?
No, I think he's saying it should be Huntress and not Batwoman. Yeah. Don't you agree with me?
Right.
...
Oh, then
who are powerful Marvel women?
Oh, easy. Okay, She-Hulk, Invisible Woman, Rogue, Kitty Pride, Storm. Awesome. Emma Frost, Black Widow.
Ms. Marvel.
Ms. Marvel, totally Ms. Marvel, yeah. Jesus, that would be awesome. Adam Hughes should totally draw that.
Pixie?
Yeah.
Pixie.
Or how about somebody who finishes books?
Nice.
Oh, bum.
Hey, we talked to him a year and a half ago. No, All-Star Wonder Woman will be coming out anytime soon. He gave us a very nice tip about vodka.
He did.
Mike Graham from Ontario, Canada says – he's got three questions actually, so
okay.
We'll do this one. I've heard how you guys up and decided to start a podcast, but how did the three of you decide to start iFanboy.com?
I swear we've answered this question.
Are you answering the question, each question, or are we hearing the questions?
Yes, one at a time.
Okay.
That's the question we went into in-depth on in the 25th episode, but we can do it quickly.
Yes, in case you don't want to go back and find the 25th episode. Because honestly, the link probably doesn't work.
Yeah,
and just email me and let me know and I'll fix it, fuckers.
We all were friends in college, read comic books, and we got out of college, we started an email list, and then each week we would send each other little capsule reviews and we would all sort of do it around, and then the list got bigger and bigger. We thought, hey, let's make a website, and we did, and then nobody else came
and then we stopped talking to those friends on the list.
Yeah, it, like none of them came to the website because they're assholes.
And
now we have all of you to make up for it because we showed them. Do you hear me, Nick?
It's true. Yeah, no, we just
look at you, Tom.
I mean, basically, we just we were emailing and we said, hey, let's this to the web. Let's do this on the web. The new, because at that time in 2000, it was fairly a new thing.
Sam.
Yeah.
Second question: what trades or collections do you find yourselves consistently pulling off the shelves and rereading? Watchmen and Dark Knight are gimmies.
I don't think they are gimmies.
You kidding me?
I read each one of those at least once a year. Yeah.
Nah, I don't.
Yeah, you should. They're great.
Yeah, you should go fuck yourself. sorry, I don't know where that came from. That's a good question.
We're only five questions in and Ron's already getting punched.
Because I'm like four drinks in.
Preacher? I don't reread that much, unfortunately.
Yeah, honestly, we're reading so much new stuff for the shows.
Yeah,
that it's hard
honestly,
to read.
Yeah, the rereading has really gone downhill. That's for us personally.
Yeah, but I've read Preacher a few times. That's probably the only one.
I don't find myself reading, but I find myself flipping through New Frontier and Sin City a lot. Like I just like flip through them.
I'm gonna reread Alias very soon.
You know, it's funny because I was just looking at that omnibus on the shelf, and I was like, I should read that.
Hours.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of things that I want to reread because it's been so long, and I still say I love them, but
Maybe I don't love them anymore, but I think I love them even more.
His third question, here's the obligatory comic nerd question. Who's more powerful, Superman, Martian Manhunter, or Captain Marvel?
Which Captain Marvel, bitch?
I think DC, because there are other DC characters. I think we have to assume it's Shazam.
I'm punchy.
I'm going to say Captain Marvel.
Why? Just to be honest?
No. Because, okay, Martian Manhunter's out because of the weakness to flame. To fire.
But he's also the weakest of the three anyway.
Yeah, but an argument could be made because he can be invisible and he's the telepath. That's pretty – like for me, telepaths always win these battles. But
I could take – you're writing a story, Superman versus Martian Manhunter, Superman wins. Superman wins any of these.
Well, no, except no. Captain Marvel beats him because what are Captain Marvel's powers?
Martyr.
Magic.
Magic-based.
Magic-based. Yeah. So Captain Marvel wins despite what happened in Kingdom Come.
Superman finds a way to win.
No, Batman finds a way to win.
Well, that's not the question. It's not who would win in a fight. It's who's more powerful, and that's easily Superman. But if they were fighting, Captain Marvel...
Oh, no, I think Captain Marvel's more powerful. To be honest.
No, he's not.
You don't think so? Why not?
Superman's
nerd stalemate.
Why not? I mean, Captain Marvel has the wisdom of Solomon, the hair of Hades,
That is not correct.
What does Shazam mean? What is it? It's the...
Hair of Hades!
He's got the boots of Aphrodite. He's got the belt of...
Hades isn't even a god. It's a place. I don't know what I was thinking.
Hades is the god and the place.
Okay. He's got the, you know, this the
Solomon. Hermes, I believe.
Speed of Hermes, the lightning of Zeus.
The power of Zeus.
The power of Zeus. The power of Zeus is a lot of power.
The wisdom of...
Solomon.
Wisdom of Athena. The strength of Atlas.
No, it's Solomon's wisdom. S.
I gotta look it up.
One of them is Achilles. All right,
hang on.
One of them is Achilles.
Atlas. It's Achilles and Atlas. Those are the two A's.
Yeah.
Hang on, I'm looking it up.
Mercury, Zeus, Atlas, Achilles, Hades, and Solomon.
Hades' hair. The hair of these guys. What you didn't know is that Hades has a toupee.
And he has the actual hair around. Of Hades.
All right, here we go. Okay, so Shazam, it's the wisdom of Solomon, the strength of Hercules, the stamina of Atlas, the power of Zeus, the courage of Achilles, and the speed of Mercury.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
Nowhere in there does it mention the Hades hair anywhere.
No, nothing about Hades' hair, no.
Someone you should update that Wikipedia entry.
That's my pitch to DC.
You should call Judd Winnick right now. Hey. Done with the series, and how did you get my number?
All right, next question comes from Caroline, or also known as Caroline on iFanboy.com.
Funny, that's how you read it.
Yeah.
I read it like this. Oh, Caroline.
Connor, how do you read it?
I can't say that out loud.
You hear that? That's how we set him up and knock him down here at iFanboy.
I'm sorry, Caroline. Okay, for each of you, if you could take charge of any title, character, universe for a day, and you were allowed to impose one retcon, big or small, what would you choose?
I got it.
Okay, Josh?
Hawkeye and Mockingbird. Hawkeye is real. Back West Coast Avengers. Do it.
All
right. That's not a retcon, though. That's like a reboot.
Whatever. That's my answer. Suck it.
All right, then.
Well, can we change it to reboot, or can we just get rid of something?
Retcon, reboot, whatever you want.
I'm just going to take an action and get rid of Jason Todd.
That's a retcon. Just say Jason Todd didn't come back. It's not Jason Todd. It's somebody who thinks he's Jason Todd.
Clayface
coming back or him being completely
He never came back.
Okay,
that's fine. I would retcon Morrison's entire second mutation thing on the X-Men.
So your name is Matt Fraction.
Yeah, my name is Matt Fraction. Hello, nice to meet you. The hatred. It's good comics. Don't get me wrong. That's my disclaimer. It's good comics, just not X-Men comics.
Okay. Edward Doherty of Canberra, Australia. Mate. Do all Marvel and DC characters besides Daredevil have some weird universal religious background undefined, not to upset readers, or is it just me? And while we're at it, is Green Arrow the only character to display any political opinions? Okay, those are two. We'll do those, and then there's one more he's got. The first one is no. They all have specific religions. Actually, there's a webpage. If you search comic book character religions.
Ooh, it's hardcore, too.
Yeah, it's like the Beast is an Episcopalian.
Yeah,
the Huntress is very overtly Catholic.
Yeah, she wears a cross.
Daredevil's Catholic, very Catholic. There's lots of them.
Sabra is very Jewish.
Nightcrawler.
Yep. Nightcrawler in his religion, yeah.
So is Green Arrow the only character to display any political opinions? He can't be. Why can't I think of anyone else then?
Kind of. Because they don't really deal with politics. So that's Green Arrow's shtick, is that he's the firebrand political guy. So the other, I mean, they don't do those kind of stories. So that's usually, I mean, Hawkman was always placed as his headbutter. So if anything, you'd say Hawkman, but he's not really human.
Yeah, but Hawkman wasn't like, no, abortion should be illegal. It wasn't like that. Like Hawkman,
very special issue.
Hawkman wasn't really like a raging right winger or anything. He would just
that would be a head scratcher.
That would be.
That'd be one of those issues where you stop in the middle and go, what?
Hawkman's there talking about tax cuts and the right to bear arms, and he's an NRA member, and him and Charlton Heston go way back.
He doesn't like guns. He uses maces.
Right, yeah. He's the right to bear arms. I don't know. That's a really good question. I mean, like, there's the whole – I mean, Marvel's done a lot of skirting the boundaries of political opinion by, you know, especially with Captain America, but not really taking either side but being political but not really decisive to piss people off. I don't know. I hate politics.
They kind of have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ed's last question is, Josh, if Ron and Connor both needed a kidney transplant or they would die, who would you give your kidney to and why, assuming you would give a kidney to either one of them, of course?
Jesus, what the fucking kind of question is this? And why Josh?
I know, because what? I'm the one who would be the most weird about it. Like, Connor would just be like, Ron. Like, why? Because. And it'd be over it. And I don't know, I can't pick. Honestly, I couldn't pick.
The irony is that I'm not giving anybody a kidney.
I know. I was like, well, I'd probably have to save it for my wife, just in case. Yeah. So they would both die.
Nice.
Sorry.
All right.
I took a vow.
Next question comes from Joe?
Butt Ice. Say it. Butt Ice.
Is that his last name? Batice?
Yes. Okay, yes.
Joe Batice. I'm so sorry, Joe. I just finished listening to your quote-unquote Dark Knight, and I agree with – I'm assuming the movie? Yeah. And I agree with all what – you said, except for Connor not wanting to see a third installment. I really think they could make a really good Riddler story, make it almost like a Seven or Zodiac, where Enigma is killing random people but sending riddles to the police and Batman. It could be a really interesting concept. What do you think?
That's not the Riddler. The Riddler's a thief, not a murderer, for one thing.
True, good point.
Am I right? Am I not wrong about
that? Yeah, no, he's not. He's even a good guy right now.
Yeah.
No, you can't, the Riddler, there's no...
Wow, all right. I think there could be a third movie. It's obviously going to be two.
Well, there is going to be a third movie, yeah. But yeah. I don't want there to be a third movie. That's the difference.
Right, you see.
Because you can't beat the Joker.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we all know the luck we've had with the third comic book movies.
No.
Between X-Men, Ratner, Shitballs, and Venom Dancing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Spider-Man 3, which I like.
We're doomed.
You could make up a villain. I thought of somebody at one point that I thought would work okay, but...
It was a ventriloquist. That's what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, the ventriloquist.
Oh, the Mad Hatter guy? No, not the Mad Hatter.
No. Not
Scarface. Scarface. Yeah.
You could make that work.
It should be Darkseid.
That would be a left turn.
Yeah, make it go cosmic.
Awesome, by the way. If they like he goes in an alley and they just sort of pull back, Darkseid is. Holy shit.
He goes into an alley and drives into a boom tube, and then he's in Apocalypse. This next one is long, so here we go.
Oh,
Dominic says, I recently met you guys in passing at the San Diego Comic-Con. I've got something that I wanted to get your take on. I was at Comic-Con from Wednesday through Friday. This is my fourth or fifth year in a row attending. As you guys know, it's getting bigger and bigger every year. I'm slowly whittling down my Comic-Con experience to the early part of the week to minimize dealing with the crowds. I've lowered my expectations of getting into certain panels and presentations. This year, however, I finally feel like Comic-Con has reached its critical mass. One, how do you guys handle it? You hit more cons than me and seem to have a good time. We don't. I'm not after wear comfortable clothing or bring lots of water advice. I wondered what you guys really get out of cons. Meeting the creators of various books, the TV and film stuff, scouring the floors, getting some limited edition, only 300 available limited grant, hoo-ha, or what do we get out of cons?
I'll keep reading.
For me, I'm over the cosplayers. I live in LA and I have access to pretty much any sort of collectible trinket or import toy if I wanted that. There's some decent comic shops out here that cater to mainstream independent artists. I work in the film business and get plenty of insider scoop on stuff. I was an animator in Spider-Man 3. On top of that, the internet...
Everyone meets talking about comic books. I was an animator in Spider-Man 3,
On top of that, the internet pretty much gives you all the access you need more. That got me wondering about other cons, namely Ape and WonderCon. First of all, if you go early, you're actually getting the crowds, because it was more crowded in the beginning of the week than it was.
Saturday is the new Wednesday.
Saturday was dead.
Yeah, exactly. On the floor, on the con floor, it was busy in the panels and everything. Yeah, but I mean, the thing is that San Diego Comic-Con is unlike any. It's like comparing the World Series Game 7 to a game in May on a Wednesday. You know, in terms of comparing it to other conventions. You know, that was a baseball reference. I'm sorry. And like for me, I mean, we go because we have to be there. But for me, like what I'm after now is I'm like hanging out with Josh and Connor and meeting other people and hanging out and meeting cool people and just like kind of, you know,
kind of are in our element there.
Yeah, exactly.
We're doing our jobs there. So, like, honestly, it's funny because all that stuff about, like, prints and collect. We haven't done that stuff for years. Right. And I don't say that like there was like Scott who was there this year. Like he was doing the con for me.
Yep.
I was living vicariously. He's like, I got this signed and I picked up this and I bought that. And I was like, yes, well, right on.
And it was, yeah, it was funny because one of the iFanboy writers, Sonia, was there with her brother who had never been to San Diego. And like at four points throughout the whole weekend, I saw them just like running across the floor to go get some action figure that was going on sale at noon and then to go get somebody's signature. And it was like that virgin con experience that like it only happens once. And every year you get more and more kind of jaded by it. And it was nice to see, you know, people enjoying the con that way. But that said, for me, the conventions, the breaths of fresh air are Emerald City Con, WonderCon, Heroes Con. Like, I have more fun at those than I do at San Diego.
Yeah, I mean, it depends what you're there for. At this point, for us, like, San Diego's, it's about, like, talking to people we know and like and meeting folks from the show and like, that part's awesome. It's about people, like, and we're meeting.
It's a social aspect. It's really the most fun. I mean, we go for our jobs, but we like it for the social aspect.
Yeah. But from a comic-wise, the smaller cons are way more fun because there are less panels. They're, you know, it's easier to walk the floor. It's easier to get to the creator you want. There's not as many. It's just smaller. You know, it's like
If you're not into that stuff anymore, I could see skipping it.
Yeah.
If you're not into getting signatures and buying shit.
Oh no, I think there was a year when we just all skipped San Diego because iFanboy wasn't as going as strong as it is now, and we're just like we've been for the past 3 years, I don't need to go, and we were all like yeah. And honestly, if we weren't doing iFanboy, I bet you we wouldn't be there this year.
No, but we might go to somewhere like Seattle again because that was a really neat show.
I love Seattle. That was great. Seattle.
And like they're just you go and it was all about comics, and it was just like go talk to the people who make the comics you like, pick up some stuff. That was really cool.
Yeah.
John Coltrane 68 on iFanboy says, it occurs to me that there are great characters who, while great in small and even frequent doses, are not as interesting in their own books. I know that Wolverine has been suggested as one of these characters, but his books have been largely successful, and I'm certainly enjoying the current arc. I might propose Namor, Doctor Strange, the Black Panther. Obviously, I'm a Marvel fan. I love all of these characters, but how many Atlantean throne usurpers, denizens of nether dimensions, and vibranium thieves can there possibly be? Do you agree with this premise? If so, which characters currently with solo books do you enjoy, but at the same time would be happy to see them in limited appearances in series of their own instead of?
We've talked about characters like the Punisher who are great secondary characters, right?
Martian Manhunter was the typical DC one.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Nightwing.
Hey!
Just looking to see if you're paying attention.
I think, any great writer can make any character interesting. The question is for how long. Mm-hmm. And some people just don't go on forever.
A lot of people were skeptical of Booster Gold and were, 15 issues in or whatever to that run.
Maybe getting to the edge of his.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm enjoying it, but not as much as I would the first six issues. Just like, all right.
That's funny.
I don't have 24 issue run in him. That may be it.
I don't agree. I don't think Wolverine was one of the. I mean, he might have been early on, but now he's firmly established himself as a solo character.
He can be, but I really think it takes somebody good to do him. Otherwise, you end up with a lot of really lackluster stories. I mean, Mark Miller's doing something really unique with him right now, so that's.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of another one. There's a lot of Marvel books right now that. I mean, like, who'd have thought Ms. Marvel'd still be going?
Yeah, totally. Or Nova, the book that could never get any traction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, those guys, it's because Abnett and Lanning are just
gods among men.
They're demigods, at least.
Yeah. So
those are two guys I love to see.
Yeah, Abnett and Lanning. Yeah.
Yeah.
So why aren't you buying the Authority?
The Authority died for me after Mark Miller left it.
Yeah.
All right.
So John, I do agree with that premise. I think it exists, but I also say that a good writer, agree with Connor that a good writer can do whatever. Yeah,
but not necessarily forever though.
Not forever, but it's very, very hard.
You can get a maxi series out of it.
Yeah.
You know who's never had a solo series?
Who?
Hawkeye.
That's not true.
Not one that lasted any amount of time.
Oh, yeah. Well, but he's had miniseries.
No. But what I'm saying is he's never had, like, 80-issue run on something.
You know what I really like is that, when you type into Google, it remembers your previous searches or whatever? And I just typed in Hawkeye, and it came up. This is what came up. Hawkeye, Hawkeye Comics, Hawkeye Death, Hawkeye Not Like This.
What does that mean?
That's when he died in Avengers Disassembled, and when he went in, he's screaming, going, "Not like this!" And then he died.
they had to bring him back because that's a punk out way to go.
Oh, that totally was. I that's what I'm saying is that Bendis did this whole Hawkeye thing with the. I think Bendis's run on Avengers is going to be Hawkeye story.
He kind of alluded to that, but it's to break him down so that he could build him up in his own way.
Hawkeye also featured in 2 4-issue miniseries published in 1983 and 1994, respectively.
This is a major character who's never, like, they're miniseries. They've never even attempted an ongoing series with him.
He was front and center in Avengers as well as Thunderbolts.
Well, with Thunderbolts, he saved that book.
And West Coast Avenger, yeah, totally.
It's interesting, that's all.
Yeah, fascinating. All right, well, Hawkeye also has really good taste in music. And and I bet you Hawkeye would shop at emusic.com. And you could shop at emusic.com as well. If you go to emusic.com/ifanboy, you could check out, you could sign up there. It's a really cool subscription-based service where you can get DRM-free MP3s of a lot of really great indie artists as well as artists that you might be familiar with. And if you go to emusic.com/ifanboy, check out a playlist of songs that we selected that we think you might dig. But if you sign up, you can get 50 free songs. You can download the songs we recommend or download anything else you want that's on emusic.com. So go to emusic.com/ifanboy. Hawkeye was created by who, Josh?
It wasn't Stan. Is it Kirby?
Stan Lee and Don Heck.
Oh, yeah. Because he was an Avengers villain, right?
Yeah, well, he was first introduced in Tales of Suspense number 57.
He was one of the first new Avengers after the original lineup.
Yeah, but I think in Tales of Suspense he was a reluctant villain.
Right.
Yeah, lovely.
Cleophas Wayne from Brooklyn, New York says, "I'm not rare in that I've really grown to love Geoff Johns' work at DC. I've been more of a Marvel fan, and so Johns in particular is such a great gateway into DC characters, history, and events for me. Action Comics is one of my favorite books right now, and I pick up anything he writes. But does Geoff Johns have any creator-owned work? Bendis has Powers, Brubaker's Criminal, Morrison has all his own stuff, and on, but I never heard anything about Johns. Did DC build this guy in a lab? What's up with that?"
No.
Yes.
What? Maybe.
Yes, he does.
What?
He has one creator-owned work that was, I'm trying to remember it now.
When the hell did that happen?
Earlier.
I assumed.
Yeah.
I would know about it if it was in the last year or so.
Fuck, because I got into this argument at the store, and I'm like, because we're talking about, you know, creator-owned work, whatever, and I was like, Johns doesn't have anything creator-owned, and they got slapped in my face that he did.
All right, you think about that. We'll get to the next question. What you think? Very unrelated, but no less valid. I've never heard any of you talk about Harvey Pekar or Crumb Books. What's up with that? Strictly speaking, American Splendor is one of the greatest comic book movies ever. The guy is still producing work as far as I can tell. Not fans? Not that I'm some super fan, but of the work itself, I'm just curious what your opinions are. I've got one American Splendor book, one of those big collections. Mm-hmm. It's very good.
I've flipped through them and, for whatever reason, not been interested. I'd heard of it for years. I loved that movie to death. I also love the Crumb documentary, but the Crumb work, while to me is very visually impressive, I'm not interested in it from a story standpoint because it's not really what it's about, I guess. It's just sort of not my style. So there.
Pekar to me is like one of the, when you think of indie comics, that's what I still think of. When I hear the word indie, I still think of books like that are drawn and written by guys, you know, on the side, very dirty looking, appearing to be unprofessional but really not, and very personal. That's what I still think of when I think of indie books. So that's, I mean, Pekar's
one of the great. He's definitely one of the greats. He's up there with R. Crumb and all that kind of stuff. I've read a lot of Crumb. My high school and my hometown and my college library had a lot of R. Crumb stuff, and I read in those years just because I knew, because it was right when the documentary came out and I was reading comics. I'm like, oh, I should read this guy's stuff. And, you know, I wasn't stoned, but I enjoyed it.
Well, there you go.
Okay, so the internet has helped me, and Geoff Johns has 2 creator-owned works that have been published.
By who?
The first one is called The Possessed, which was published by Wildstorm and was written by Geoff Johns and Chris Grimminger, and art was by Liam Sharp.
When?
I don't have a date on it. So it says, "In a world where demons walk the earth and the devil's day is near, man's only hope lies in the hands of a small band of exorcists trained in the art of combat and hardened by one common element. They are all possessed as children, but what happens when they lose their faith?" That's that, the first one. And the second one is he did a book called Olympus, which was for Humanoids Publishing. And Butch Geist was the artist. And Johns and Chris Grimminger.
That sounds vaguely familiar now that you mentioned it.
Excuse me. And Chris Grimminger were the writer. And that was published in 2005.
Just very, John Ron's getting very emotional about it.
It's choking me up.
Geoff Johns' indie work has made him verklempt.
It has. Yeah, so it's the Humanoids. That's what I couldn't remember was the Humanoids thing, and I don't know who the Humanoids are or whatever, but that was creator-owned. Yay.
Yeah, you know, Geoff Johns just seems to have been a man built only to make the DC comics is better than they ever had a right to be.
Okay.
I mean, like, just that's what he does really well. Maybe he's got something else in him. It'd be interesting to see, but...
Jenny Y. from Boston writes in saying, "I'm still in a state of shock after James Jean announced that he would be leaving Fables covers as of number 81. His covers have brought a lot of readers to Fables, and it's sad to see such an integral part of Fables go. Nevertheless, I wish him luck with his independent work. Who would you like to see do the new covers of Fables?
I'm not really a cover guy. And it's funny because that's like a Vertigo thing. Like, I can appreciate their very nice covers, but it's funny that, like, the covers are such an integral not really. I'd be fine if I just read the interiors. They're very nice, and they're good and everything, but I don't know.
Wow, you just let Jenny down hard.
Yeah.
I know I did, but I'm a story guy. And
what
the
about
covers...
Nico Hendershon, the guy that did the...
He's beautiful.
Pride of Baghdad and stuff. He does some covers.
What is he doing?
I see him do covers lately. He's been doing some covers.
Oh, really? He's great. He should do another book.
I feel like he's doing something.
He should do The Flash.
Well, yeah. Just anybody you can think of, you're like, what The Flash? What are you doing? He's going to start walking with people in conventions. Hey, how you doing?
Why don't you have do you thought Flash? About The Flash? Do you have a Flash pitch?
No, James Jean is going to do like high fashion work and illustration and make real money.
Pay the bills.
Yeah, exactly. Screw this. It's funny because I read everything in trades for a while, so I didn't even sort of see the covers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I read the first 60 issues like that. Yeah. I don't know. Dave Johnson.
Awesome. Tim Bradstreet.
No, I'm so sick of Tim Bradstreet covers.
What?
I don't like them. I like them for awesome. Some books. He was good on Hellblazer, but it's just a grim dude looking at me. It's scary. Captain Cool says, simply put, does the news that Tom Cruise is looking at playing Holden Carver scare you?
Obviously, he's making you stutter.
Yeah, well, he just wrote Holden, and I was like, that's too inside. He is talking about the news that Tom Cruise is on board with Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips' Sleeper, which is, I believe, a favorite story of all of us.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a Wildstorm book that came out a few years back.
Are you scared?
No. It doesn't scare me.
He shouldn't play Holden. He should play Tao.
He's too old to play Tao.
Yeah, who cares?
He, you know what? I'm going to shoot myself in the foot. Tom Cruise isn't necessarily a bad actor.
He's just a crazy man.
He hasn't been really very good lately, I don't think, but he's done things really good in the past. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's been great in everything he's ever been in, and he hasn't been great for a while, but he's definitely done stuff that was really good. You know, like when he was the Jamie Foxx movie where he was the bad guy? He was good in that.
Oh, Ray. Collateral.
He was really good.
Man, that was a really good movie.
That was a
good movie. Go way back. He's really good in Born on the 4th of July. So on the surface, he's not a bad actor. So, you know, if he plays himself Tom Cruise and he gets all winky with the camera while trying to play Holden Carver, that's bad. But if he actually goes and plays it and doesn't go to be a poster boy, I'm sure he could do fine with it.
He was amazing in Tropic Thunder.
That might be a different way.
I'm just saying, but he did it. I didn't even know it was him until like the third scene he was in.
It's also so far away. He's only optioned it, so it's not like it's happening.
Yeah, that's the thing about these options. So few of them. Such a small percentage of these happen. But then again, the other side of it is if Tom Cruise decides he would like to play Holden Carver, that movie's getting made. And two guys whose work I really, really like are going to do very well for themselves. And I'm cool with that.
I'm sorry.
Say the name.
I apologize ahead of time. Guy and
John.
John Laya Garcia.
Connor, not a Spanish student.
Cerveza. I just finished reading the entire American Virgin. This is all for Josh. American Virgin series. I enjoyed the story a lot, but I felt like the last arc, the one titled 69, wrapped things up too quickly. I was satisfied enough with the endings. That's what she said. But I have this nagging feeling that this wasn't supposed to end this way, and that the last arc felt like a little rushed. I'm not sure if that's how it really I really see it, or if that's how I feel about it since I knew the series was canceled. Has anyone else read the series? What did you think of it? I guess my main question is, does knowing that a series is going to get canceled influence your opinion on the ending when you actually read it?
Okay, so there's a two-part question. Just real quick, I think I'm the only one who read American Virgin at all.
Yes.
I probably read the first 1.5 arcs. I didn't really like it. I stopped reading it. So I don't know how it ended.
It got canceled. That's how it ended.
Well, I know that, but I didn't even read that far because it wasn't – I canceled it myself a little early, you see. I've never made it very far with any Steven Seagal series. I don't know, whatever reason that is, I start reading, I'm like, well, that sounds good. I'm like, I don't want to keep reading this. But the second part of the question is, knowing that a series is going to be canceled, does that influence your opinion on the ending? That's actually a really interesting question because, you know, we hear about it in comic books way before it happens. And usually we tend to know whether the writer has to truncate their story for that purpose. And so
you know a lot.
Yeah,
yeah, we know too much.
We know if they're happy about it. We know if they're pissed.
I don't mean me, Ron, and Connor.
No, the world. People read Newsarama.
Right. I mean, you know, exactly. good examples recently, Noble Causes, Exterminators. You know, like these are books that we read, that we liked, and then we hear they're going to cancel, and then we got to make that decision if we're going to see it till the end.
Not so much, how do we feel about it? Is it, we look at it differently? Do we think, wow, this has been this
well,
has been rushed?
I mean, personally, I start looking for signs of truncation. Like, I start looking for, even if it's subconsciously, I'm looking out for, well, what did they have to lose? And I'm starting like, well, did it feel a little rushed? You know, as opposed to something like, you know, Why the Last Man's ending, where he got to, you know, cruise into the hangar at exactly the speed he wanted to, and it felt right.
You know what this makes me think of, which is really interesting, the analogy of or amalgam of television shows, in that comics is one of the few mediums where they can wrap it up. And I'm thinking of, like, if there's a TV show you like that gets canceled, they just cancel it on whatever episode they're on. And yep. and the most recent one, embarrassingly so, but there was a Fox series called Reunion that was a big murder mystery, and each episode delved deeper into it, and they canceled it like 12 episodes in, and I don't know who did it. And it's been driving me crazy for like 2 years now. And I'll never know. You know, it's interesting to see how, you know, comics is lucky in that you get this, albeit it's truncated, you get to see it end.
So. Yeah, most of the time.
Yeah.
Not always, but usually.
Joe Casey's Wildcats just ended.
Yeah.
And I never got to see what happened at the end. I could probably ask him. But still, it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
All right. And I don't remember it anymore.
Next question comes from Adam. With Secret Invasion and Final Crisis out right now, it inspired me to go back and read some of the other big company-wide crossover events I own. Currently, I'm on Crisis of Infinite Earths, and I've decided as I've been reading it that it's my favorite, despite some of Wolfman's dialogue. I mean, quote-unquote, what in blue blazes? Really? Who talks like that? Well, he hasn't read many comics. Simply because the scope of it was amazing, without being the muddled mess that Infinite Crisis was. So my question is, what would each of you say is your favorite big event and why?
Atlantis attacks.
The Asgard Wars.
What'd you say?
The Asgard Wars.
Asgard.
Speaking of events, I recently flipped through the trade paperback of Civil War, and it's not good. Like the last issue, like the finale, I'm like, wow, this isn't good.
Wow.
Sorry. My favorite event goes back to is an X-Men event, and it's the first one I read in Extinction Agenda, and that was my favorite because of from sentimentality reasons.
Mine's got to be the earthquake, the Gotham City earthquake, whole thing. No Man's Land, but even before that,
Cataclysm.
That's the word I was looking for. Cataclysm and Aftershock and No Man's Land. That whole thing was just disturbingly good. Through multiple books for a long, 80, long time.
85 books it went Jesus. Through.
Oh, how could I forget? Operation Galactic Storm from 1993.
Oh, God. I bought all of that.
So did I. Oh, it was miserable. It was an Avengers crossover. And it was a...
What's the worst thing about that? Is that they aped the name of a real war?
Yes. Or that...
Oh, God.
Or that one, what's the or what? What's worse than that?
Nothing.
I might change mine to Live Kree or Die.
I bought that too.
Oh God!
Infinite Crisis was good though.
Okay.
What about Batman Nightfall?
Nice.
Let's not talk about that. Let's instead. Joshua from Florida says, "What's up with not putting Amazing Spider-Girl into Marvel 616 continuity?" As a longtime reader of the book, it seems like she has enough following. To an interest from the readers to warrant the upgrade from the big leagues to Marvel. It even seems perfect to do it now in a time where in the current continuity we can do whatever we want. Editors of Marvel, I blew that whole ending. I'm sorry. Basically, in the current atmosphere at Marvel is they can do whatever they want, so why not bring her in? That book
you ever listen to this show, Joshua?
Well,
that book's been on life support for the entire run. It's not like there's a lot of people buy it.
No, every time they've tried to cancel it like four times, and it survives. It's like the cockroach of the Marvel Comics world.
Yeah, it's not because it's popular, because for whatever reason, but it doesn't sell well.
No, because it's because when they try to cancel it, then there's all the surge of support from the people buying it. I don't know how it survived.
DeFalco has photos on Joe Quesada.
That's got to be. There's a distinction that he's made here, where he's saying, "What's up with not putting Amazing Spider-Girl in Marvel 616? They're not going to put the character in. She's an established separate kind of timeline or reality or whatever, so that's not going to happen.
But it wouldn't make any sense.
Right, and so then the idea of planting seeds that, you know, Spider-Man has a future child that is May Parker or whatever it is, well, you know, there is a baby out there.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, so who knows?
You know when Tom DeFalco lost me?
When?
I bought a one-shot Hawkeye special that he wrote.
Oh, is this the Hawkeye show?
Isn't it always the Hawkeye show?
Ever since he's been back.
I thought he lost you at that that con where he talked about
He
writing.
Lost me later at a con when he was talking about how there was too many words in comics
no,
and story.
He lost you at a con when he got two aisles ahead and you couldn't keep following him. I love the idea of you chasing Tom DeFalco around San Diego.
Like asking for my money back on my Hawkeye issue.
Mr. DeFalco, Mr. DeFalco.
No, he actually literally, I went to a writers on panel, writers and comics writers on a panel. Like, it's like DeFalco.
Danny Fingeroth?
Yeah, Danny Fingeroth, nice. Stephen Grant, and Kurt Busiek. And
well,
like,
that's the most boring panel I've ever heard.
It was so boring. And DeFalco was just complaining about modern comics. It was like an older version of Alex Ross.
Oh god.
I'm slagging everyone off.
150, the episode where it all ended.
Number 17, Rob from Tennessee. What comics related podcast do you listen to regularly? Are there any you would recommend over another? Pick a winner. No, don't cry, guys. I'm not trying to replace you. Just supplement my voracious comic podcast appetite. I have a wide range of likes, from superhero to indie, so I'll give any suggestions a try. I also love trades. Do you know of any good casts that feature trades, hardbacks, graphic novels, and omnibus-style printings? Well, that last question is easy. There's the Comics Collected Library, which is Chris Marshall.
Great podcast. Just focuses great podcast. On trades,
which is just like the one dude talking, but he does a really good job.
And he posted iFanboy.com.
Yes. Wait, say that again?
He posts on iFanboy.com.
Yes.
So if there's ever a question about a collected edition or anything like that, he'll give you the answer.
By the way, in case you weren't, it's late at night right now. And I'm punchy and I'm totally starting to lose it. We did this on purpose because we figured it'd be funny, but it may just be awful.
So podcast-wise, as far as I'm concerned, there's only like a handful that are worth listening to, which are Around Comics, Word Balloon, Pipeline, and the best comics podcast out there, Tom versus The Flash.
Yeah,
those are the ones I listen to.
I just shotgunned a bunch of those, and they're fantastic.
Tom Caters, who's normally on Around – I mean, he's on Around Comics. It's him solo recapping The Flash, and previously before that he did the JLA, and it's like this bizarro performance art. Like it's amazing. It's hysterical.
You know what's great about Tom?
What?
Is that he's awesome, but he totally could give a shit if you think so.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's great about him. Like, he's just like, you know what? If people don't like what I say, they fuck themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Turn it off. He doesn't care. He doesn't need you.
I honestly, when we first started doing this a while ago, I listened to a lot of comics podcasts, and honestly, I got over it.
Yeah.
Like, it was just too much. Like, when I listen to other podcasts now, like, I talk about comics enough with a lot of people, so I tend to listen to other stuff instead.
Yeah.
The thing about the comics podcast is there's 8 bajillion of them, so,
right.
You know, if you have a lot of time on your hands, you whittle through them and, like, listen to some of those. Like, we had a video show with all the comics podcast guys on it, you know, Comic Geek Speak and several other people on Too Tight. Indie Spinner Rack's a great show, by the way.
Oh, yeah, Indie Spinner Rack, definitely. I'm sorry, I should have mentioned Indie Spinner Rack. They're awesome.
That's the best one for indie discussion and interviews.
Yeah.
That's a great one.
Yeah, just go to iTunes. Go to iTunes, type in comic books, and you'll see the ones towards the top, you know, and those just find one, you'll find one that you like. Our next question comes from Jen D. from Portland, who asks, how do you feel about encyclopedias for comic universes? I remember getting the old DC Who's Who in the Marvel handbook. They were cool because you could update them easily with the individual sheets. Now the trend seems to be hardcover encyclopedias, which claim to depict all characters in a given universe. However, characters are changing and shifting so often that these encyclopedias come out all the time. I'd really like to have a solid character reference for Marvel and DC, but I can't keep dropping $40 or $50 every time the updated encyclopedia comes out. Am I doomed to rely on Wikipedia? I'm asking this because the new Vertigo encyclopedia came out. I totally want it, but for one, it's not really nicely designed, which is surprising. And for two, what if they just come out with an updated one in another year? Boo to that. That's a really specific problem.
It really is. You know what's funny is I have several of types of books like this, and I got them, and I looked at them, and I said, that's really nice, and they're sitting on the shelf still.
There was a couple of years where I just bought anything that came out. Well, because I was a big fan of the official handbook in the Marvel Universe in the 80s, and I remember the sheets that she's talking about. I bought the binder. And
this is a nice little thing. If you're listening to this on Sunday night, tomorrow's mini is all about this. And if you've already seen the mini, then you're going to be
oh, okay.
Knowing. So that I talked about the
the DC Who's Who, because that's what we have. But
yeah,
they need to come back to the sheets, because then you could update them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, we all know why they do the books, because they're $40-$50 and we're going to buy them. And that's the thing. So I would say you're doomed to rely on Wikipedia. And honestly, Wikipedia, and there's a Marvel database, and like there are all these websites that have so much information about comics. And it's, you know, I don't know. I think that the printed book is of this kind of character reference is going to, you know, fall to the internet.
Or you could just read the books like me. Yeah.
Fine.
I'm a snob.
Next question.
Potter in Washington.
Wisconsin. Not even close. Potter in Wisconsin. Connor, you read it.
I started reading Batman, and I initially heard about the RIP storyline, and I'm very glad I did, as I find it to be one of the best stories coming out of the summer. In fact, I also decided to pick up the supplementary issues for the RIP storyline, Robin, Nightwing, and Detective Comics, truly enjoying all of them as well, especially Nightwing and Detective. One of the reasons I liked Detective Comics was a villain that was new to me in the Batman universe, Hush. In the last week's podcast, there was an all-around note of dislike of Hush. I'm curious why the hate of Hush.
Fuck Hush!
Or... Hush.
You know why? Because it was the fucking Jim Lee, Jeff Loeb arc, right? Mm-hmm. And it was all this hullabaloo, and he dressed up like Robin, and it turned out to be his childhood best. It was just a contrived, just boring character, and I don't like
that. Well, I think originally it was supposed to be Jason Todd, and then they had, I don't know if they had to backtrack on that or not, but then they changed it to being Clayface impersonating Jason Todd, and then it turned out to be this other guy directing Clayface to impersonate Jason Todd to dress up like him. It was convoluted. Piece of junk.
It really was. And the thing is that if you ask me, anytime you have a character with like the bandages wrapped around his head, he's an invisible man, not just a scarred guy. And I don't like the scarred guy thing.
That's a really interesting reason not to like it. But I only read the first issue of that and I went, this is not for me.
Yeah.
That was when I realized that maybe Jeff Loeb was not the thing I thought he was on all things.
All right, then. Josh, you want to give a shout out the next one?
Yeah, what up? Roy from
Ray!
Connecticut. That was the joke. Ray from Union, Connecticut. One, what is your stand on statue collecting? I own a few statues of Captain America, one of my favorite superheroes, and I just wondered if you guys collected them and if I should, quote, preserve, unquote, them in a glass case or something. What's your stand on statue collecting, guys?
Wow, nice. Nice read.
That was good.
Ron, you're it. You're all that's left here for this one.
I have some statues. I wouldn't say I'm a statue collector. I have a couple of one-offs statues that I found particularly either to be really good sculpts or just ironically funny, like the Grey Gargoyle. I don't put them in any cases or anything like that. Although there's a dude, that guy Jamie Tarquini, who posts on Comic Book Resources. He's a big statue guy, and he like has cases and stuff like that. Like his house is like he has like you know display cases and all this kind of shit. Do what makes you happy. You know, I mean, if you want to get statues, get them. If you want to preserve them, put them in a glass case.
We got you a statue for your birthday.
You did. You got me the Cyclops origin statue with the fucking Cyclops as a child in the fetal position with the bandage over his eyes.
Seriously, how fucked is that?
I love that statue so much.
Well, there was a long planned show, which is never going to happen, by the way, where we were all going to go statue shopping.
No, I really think we should still do that.
Yeah. We can do it.
That might happen someday. But there was like a brief – there was like a month – where we talked about statues a lot.
A lot. I love because the thing is, when you see a good statue, it's really hard to walk away from it.
I've walked away from them thousands of times.
I know,
now,
but for me, it's really, I'm like, oh, that's a good statue.
There's such a thing as too much, I think. Yeah. I went to some guy's house once, and it was like they were everywhere, and I thought, this is too much even for me.
What I really like is I really like the mini busts that Randy Bowen does.
You've got a lot of those.
Yeah, I actually do. I mean, I looked up one day. I'm like, oh, God, I have a lot of these. I have Cyclops, Magneto, Kitty Pryde, Nova, Grey Gargoyle. I know I'm forgetting a couple. I have a Harley Quinn statue. I have a mini statue of the Dark Knight. Batman and teaching Robin how to do the slingshot. That was a mini statue. I have the Cyclops statue. I think I have a couple more. Wow, I have a lot of statues. Fuck, I'm a statue guy, aren't I?
Sort of. You're a mini bust guy.
I'm a mini bust guy, which is kind of accurate when you think about it. What a read between the lines.
Ray owns a few statues of Captain America. Just, you might want to watch it.
Yeah.
Don't get any more. His second question, who are your top three favorite superheroes? Question goes to Ron, Josh, and Connor.
I like how he clarified that.
We are actually the three guys on the show, Ray.
Thank God it was the three of us. All right.
My top three are Superman, Hawkeye, and Captain America.
Oh, that's Ray's top three.
I know. Yeah. I was reading as him. Okay. Now I'm done reading the question. I'm speaking as Josh.
All right. So who are your favorite superheroes?
I just read the question. You say it. I have to think about it.
Okay. Connor?
Superman, Batman,
and
Robin.
Captain America. Really? Not Captain America?
He's fourth.
Oh, wow.
All right. He's my favorite Marvel character.
Oh, this is tough.
Hawkeye.
I can guess Ron's.
You can guess mine? Okay, go for it.
Spider-Man?
No.
Okay.
He's up there, but he's not in the top three.
Cyclops?
No. Cyclops was what I was going to say.
Yep.
Angel?
He's up there, not in the top three, but he's up there. I'm a big fan
Kitty
of it.
Pryde.
She's up there, not in the top three.
All right, I give up.
Oh, Madrock.
Flash. Madrock.
Madrock.
Madrock, no, he's not in the top three. Josh got
Flash,
it, right? Josh got, yeah, Flash. So it's Cyclops, Flash, and I got to say Jean Grey.
All right. I will go with Hawkeye. Didn't see that coming, huh? By the way, that was also the statue I was going to get. Hawkeye. I'd say Captain America's been up there for me for a long time. And I'm looking at my bookshelves now trying to figure it out.
Invincible.
That was on the tip of my tongue, but I don't know. You know, because Jack Knight, Starman?
Nice. Convenient answer.
Oh, I'm looking at the books.
I know. That's why.
And yes, Ray, you're not done yet. Third question. Who's your favorite creative team so far? I can't guess who's going to be a creative team in the future. Jeff Johns and Dale Eaglesham on JSA. And my Marvel is Ed Brubaker and Steve Epting. And Image is Robert Kirkman and Robert Otley. And Dark Horse is my... You know what, Ray? You're a little too organized for me. And Dark Horse is Mike Mignola and John Arcudi on BPRD. That's a little cheating.
So I'm assuming these are like current creative teams?
Guess so.
Okay. All right. Let's pick one. Okay. For Marvel, it's got to be. That's a good question. What's my favorite Marvel creative team?
Currently.
Whew.
Don't go by publisher. We'll be here all night. So just pick one.
Just do one team. One.
Yeah.
Do it.
I really like Johns and Eaglesham right now. I love that team.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
You're like disappointed.
I kind of am. I don't know.
Okay. Let me think. You go.
See, you're not the kind of dude who, like, you know, like, I don't see you looking at Dale Eaglesham art and being like, that's my favorite.
I love it. It totally works. It hits. It's such a huge part of the JSA.
Bendis and Oeming.
When they put a book out?
Every time they do, it's comedy gold or just gold.
I'm going to say Brubaker and Epting.
Oops. Oh, damn it.
When Epting's doing the book.
Yeah, I went through several Brubaker incarnations there. He tends to pick artists I love. It was like Brubaker and Phillips.
Could have been Lark.
Brubaker and Lark. Phillips. So there you go.
Cool.
Something about Epting, though, on Captain America, that works.
It does work.
We're halfway through.
Hey, Jesus. Netflix is where you get movies, and if you're not listening to podcasts, you could be watching those. They got over 90,000 titles, no late fees, free shipping both ways, Blu-ray titles, fast delivery, usually just a day. Most of the shipments ship within a day, and they plan to start from $4.99. You can get a free two-week trial at www.netflix.com/ifanboy. Don't forget to say the www or type it. You could say it. It won't do anything unless you have one of those voice-activated computers, in which case you're probably frustrated because it doesn't do quite what you want it to, kind of like an iPhone. Let's move on.
What the fuck is this next question?
Let's see. Carter, which two of you – okay, this is weird. Okay, here we go. I'm going to try to read it and see if I can get all the way through. Which two of you have been two-thirds of a threesome together? Come on. Connor's definitely one piece of a menagerie, but who's the other? I'm sure there are other I-fan gays and I-fan girls that want to know.
Carter wants to know if we've been in a threesome with one another?
Carter, just so you know, you win. That's the weirdest shit anyone's ever asked.
Wait a minute. Okay, like I know we have the iFan base. I know we have iFan girls. Do we have iFan gays?
Totally do.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm so happy. I feel like we've established ourselves. I'm still fucking back to where, like, does he. No. I will never be in a threesome with any guy friend that I keep on the level of, like, one of my best friends or very close friends for the pure reason that I just don't want to look down and see their toes curl.
But you're not averse to a guy girl situation. This is inappropriate.
This is totally inappropriate. Comics. What about you guys?
The non-denial.
I've never been in a threesome with either of you.
I could totally say so many things right now, and I'm not going to.
Moving on, Mike B from Ontario, Canada, before we get into trouble. I was wondering what... he knows too much. I was wondering what comic...
Mini busts.
I was wondering what comic character do each of you hate the most, whether it's due to a specific act, event, or just a cut of their jib. For me, it's the Joker.
Hush. No, I'm kidding. Hated comic book character. Who do I just hate when he's on the fucking page?
I only hate the Sentry right now.
Yeah, fuck the Sentry. KillTheSentry.com.
Darkhawk.
No, Faye. Hey. I hate. I don't know.
I don't hate a lot of characters.
Yeah.
I just don't read about them.
I don't know. I didn't have a joke there. I'm sorry. David B, aka Billy Parker. Why are you so constantly whiny? Please answer.
It's really a nature versus nurture question.
I'm not really whiny.
That's really a. That depends on the position you're asking. I'm not whiny. I'm critical.
Yeah.
I'm critical because I demand the best from this stuff that I spend so much time and money on. And the second that I think that somebody's phoning it in or isn't doing a good job, I think it's important to recognize that so that you can recognize the stuff that's really good and appreciate it even more. That's my real answer.
Okay. Harumph. I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
Oh, well. Sorry, David. Billy Parker, if that's your real name.
Billy Parker didn't like our view on Civil War. Now he's really not if he's listening to the show, even though he claimed to never listen to the show again.
Oh, he's the one who said that he never listened because of Civil War, and now he's back.
Yes.
Oh, Billy Parker, David B. I see your game.
Still don't like Civil War.
I just said earlier it sucked.
What's funny is that if we don't like something that you like, you can still like that thing.
Yeah, totally.
We don't like something.
And if I don't like something, doesn't mean that Josh and Connor don't like it either.
Well, that happens a lot. Yeah, no. Why do you guys hate on such and such? No, it was just Ron. Yeah.
For instance, Ron's really into guy-girl threesomes.
Hey, yo!
Yeah, he's really upset about that one Baldwin brother going to the other side. That movie was like a touchstone for him. Anyway, Meg Magnolia from the boards from PA, Pennsylvania. My cousin is a high school history teacher. Well, he shouldn't listen to this show, or his student shouldn't, I guess. Anyway, I gave him Chrissy upon your pick of the week recommendation last year, and he loved all the facts and detail that were shown in the book. What other accurate, well-researched historical fiction or nonfiction books would you recommend for a history buff?
Well, Magnolia... Interesting you ask about that, Josh.
I believe we did a program about that, and it was called History. That was the name of it. And we
also the Book of the Month.
The Book of the Month. That's what I was talking about.
Oh, that too. Yeah. Well, yeah. I edit that other show too, so that's fine.
Meg, just go to Amazon and search for anything by Rick Geary.
Yep. It doesn't have the personality, the sparkle of, say, the Crazy book, which had like an edge to it. Yeah, a wit to it. That's probably it. It's a much more dry, I suppose. Not to be any less interesting, but it's just a different kind of book. But no, we did do that history episode too. There was a bunch of books there. If you like political stuff, maybe Joe Sacco.
Yeah.
Who I mentioned in the letter column this last week. I don't know. That's about all I can think of at the moment.
Definitely go look at that history video show, though. That's a good one. There's lots of history.
Yep.
Yeah, look, tons of stuff. Go to ifanboy.com/podcasts and look in the video podcast for the history episode.
Creator Designs says, I need your help. Actually, this is related. Actually, my girlfriend needs your help, so please help me help her. You see, she's a student teacher at a high school, and she's looking for ways to teach other mediums besides just novels, short stories. I recently got her to read the first few trades of Why the Last Man, and to my delighted surprise, she enjoyed them a lot. She now wants to teach some comic books to her kids. However, she's limited by both time and content. She needs a shorter story that isn't too violent or graphic. I've suggested maybe some things out of Optic Nerve, as well as an awesome 8-page backup story from Tales of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Can you help me get any great, preferably short stories told in comic form that would be illiterate enough for her to teach her kids?
Optic Nerve, I don't know if that's appropriate.
Isn't that very adult?
Yeah, that's kind of adult, yeah.
And it's also incredibly depressing. Yeah. Also, the plural of medium is media. Just saying.
Anyway.
probably short does. Stories. Short. For how old kids? High school.
14, 18.
Short stories.
Hellboy pancakes. Actually, there's a bunch of Hellboy stories.
What about just like get an anthology. Get the Flight anthology or Pop Gun or anything. Those are all short stories.
Flight's a really good one. I mean, if you're trying to teach Yeah, like, look, how to tell a story using a different medium, like, so like the graphic way to tell a story. Flight's actually not bad for it, although I was kind of bored by it.
No, and look at the Pop Gun anthology from Image Comics. The volume 2 just came out, and those are basically like a graphic novel mixtape, and there's just all various kinds of different stories in there.
What's the content like in that?
The content is, I think it's all ages. I don't think it's adults. There's some cute stuff. There's some gritty stuff. I would have no problem giving it to a high schooler.
Here's a short book that Gene Yang, who did American Born Chinese, did another book called Gordon Yamamoto, King of the Geeks.
Nice.
Something like that. It's a short little story, and it's completely appropriate, and it's really, really, really good. So check out some of Gene Yang's book. I believe he is actually a high school teacher.
Yeah, he is actually. So here in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
You know, so, in terms of reading time, most comics are like short stories anyway.
They are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So like if you got American Born Chinese, it may look thick, but I read it on like a subway ride. Yeah. You know, it's not a long read.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Look for like that kind of thing. I think American Born Chinese would be really good actually to teach.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. American Born Chinese would be great.
It's almost just because American Born Chinese was just a little more esoteric, but King of the Geeks is just – it's like two-thirds of the length, and it's even more straightforward.
Yeah.
But it's just so good that it's cuts across every – like it's just a good story.
Cool.
The most recent Walking Dead trade.
I was going to say that, but you stole it. Our next question comes from Gabriel from Strangers with Comics. Three questions. Number one, I'm a huge fan of Spider-Man 2099. Problem is I can't remember why. It's something that I love from when I was a kid, but looking back at it, I can't remember anything about the story. My question is, do you have something like this, where you love something a lot from your childhood but can't remember why? Also, I'm interested in what you think about the Marvel 2099 line from the 90s.
Spider-Man 2099 was awesome.
And X-Men 2099 featured some excellent Ron Lim art, and I remember a lot about the story in that.
Spider-Man was written by Peter David with art by Rick Leonardi, and I remember actually it was, Spider-Man, and he had a little holographic hot assistant.
It was a future Spider-Man, yeah.
I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I think things that I enjoyed in my childhood that I can't remember why, the Uncanny X-Men.
Root beer.
Hawkeye.
Yeah, I mean, things that we enjoyed as children. I don't know. The What If comics grabbed me as a child, but I know why, because I liked them, because I liked other, alternate realities.
Comics are hard, because, I think they, you reread them, and most of them are still pretty good.
Right. Well, it's the same reason why we like stupid things when we're kids, like the Silverhawks cartoon. It's not good.
I liked Airwolf. Yeah. It was not good.
Yeah, so, anyway.
But it had a helicopter and it shot things.
Next question. I remember Connor being into Heroes when it first came out and talking about it. Only Connor. What other sci-fi shows are the three of you into? Is there a Doctor Who fan in the group?
No.
No.
No, there isn't.
And I'm friends with a lot of Doctor Who fans, and when Doctor Who comes up, I totally socially try to sneak my way out of the conversation. Like, I'm going to go to the bathroom, and then I leave. Because I don't want to be outed as not a Doctor Who fan.
They'll know.
It's supposed to be good.
It's supposed to be great, and I do want to watch all of it, but, we all love Battlestar.
Right. You guys like Star Trek.
Oh, huge Star Trek fans. Star Trek, definitely.
I like Eureka. Oh. Ron and I are big Quantum Leap fans.
Yeah, huge Quantum Leap fan. Yeah.
There's not a lot of sci-fi on right now.
Yeah.
Hmm. There isn't really. Sci-fi channel doesn't even show a lot of sci-fi.
Last question. What's the one? Yeah, you think a channel called Sci-Fi would show a lot less shitty movies? The Twilight Zone. Huge Twilight Zone fan.
Yeah. V.
Oh, V. I love V. And also the Steven Spielberg thing from the 80s.
Amazing stories.
Yeah, I love the Amazing Stories. That music.
That was fantastic.
Oh, the opening to that. Oh, I should look out for that on YouTube. Okay, so what's the one thing from your years of collecting that you look back at and are shocked at or scared by it?
All of Gabriel's questions are
self-loathing.
Look back at the past. They're very, very nostalgic.
Yeah.
He's in a room that's very dusty. I don't know. Shocked by
it? I bought a lot of crap in the 90s that I shouldn't have bought, that's for sure.
I will say that when I first started reading comics again in like 98, I bought a lot. Like I was like, well, what's this and what's this? And so I have like a stack of Battle Chasers, and I have like multiple copies of the Inhumans number one and stuff. Like, I don't know why I did that. And then for some reason, I paid extra money to have different versions, different volumes of the Justice League number one. Like the only sort of back issues that I ever paid any money for were like, the Keith Giffen Justice League number one. I didn't even know what it was back then. I just was like, I like that cover. I'm going to pay $20 for it. And then when I came back and went to San Diego for the first time in like 99, I bought Grant Morrison's Justice League number one for like $30 or $40.
I don't know why.
I've got the one that will beat all of you guys, which I've talked about it before in the podcast. I have 5 copies of every cover of X-Men number 1, all 5 covers, or all 4 covers, and then the extra special gatefold, the whole big wide cover, I bought 25 copies of that one. So, yeah.
This does bear repeating, you own 25 copies of Dark Ark number 1?
I do own 25 copies of Dark Ark number 1.
You'll be retiring at any time off this.
I know. I'm going to make millions, Jerry, millions. Oh, God.
That scares me enough to count for my answer.
We were the right age for that, totally. We were like 13.
Money to burn. Yeah, totally.
When Robin came out, they put out a bagged comic,
yep.
And then I would buy the bagged comic, and then I would buy a second bagged comic that I could open, and then I would also buy the newsstand edition, which had a different cover.
You know what's
so really, every one of those issues, it would seem I have 3 copies of each one.
What's really funny is that they really raised the stakes on me, and they wooed me into it, because what happened was that Spider-Man number 1 came out, and that had different colored covers, and they were all polybagged. So there was the black, there's the silver and black cover, there was the purple and green cover, there's the red, you know, like there was all those different things, and I only bought one cover. I bought the purple. And the purple and green cover and bagged.
Right? I have the silver one, yeah.
I bought the silver one to read, but I kept the purple and green one bagged. Then X-Force number 1 came out, and this was a big deal because it was polybagged with a trading card. So I bought I bought 25 copies of that motherfucker. All right? So I was like, man, this is X-Force, this is Rob Liefeld. This is going to be amazing, right? So I bought 26 copies, one to read. And
did you sell drugs as a kid?
No, I didn't. I stole a lot. And so then after X-Force came out, then they come out with X-Men, and they're not polybagged or have trading cards, but they've got different covers. And I was like, well, fuck.
I distinctly remember when that came out. I was vacation in Cape Cod, and we went to a comic store, and I bought one copy of each version.
Yeah.
All 5 versions and the gatefold version. Yeah. Just
why? It's the same comic book. It was the same comic book.
Did I do that?
You know, but then
I was out by then. I missed that whole thing.
Yeah, but then I look back on life. I look at my life now, and I look at, you know, shelves of DVDs and going to see bands play every night when they play 5 nights in a row in New York City and things like that. So really nothing's changed. It's just gotten more expensive over the years.
And he still steals.
Yeah, I still steal.
Joel Rollins writes and says, have you guys noticed the brutal nature towards the smaller side characters? I remember back in the older days of the comics, these comics characters would be the heart of the books. Now they are used as cannon fodder. For example, Uncanny X-Men 501, Pixie got mutant bashed as if they couldn't pick a different character. I'm not partial to her. Just thought, hey, nowadays would they do that to Kitty Pryde? The thing that really made me notice was Teen Titans issue 62. I wasn't going to pick it up, but I did. It introduced a new Wonder Dog. The part of me got me halfway through the issue was when the dog brutally rips apart the Wonder Twins, who, by the way, we haven't seen in like 6 or 7 issues, if not more. Just curious if you guys had noticed them letting characters walk off into the sunset, or did they plan on maiming them? What do you guys think, and what did you think of Teen Titans 62?
I'm going to go get a drink.
Yeah, I'll be right there.
Yeah. Connor, are you?
Well, what do we think? I mean, Pixie, like, do we think – I think they're definitely taking characters they're not using and using them to up the stakes of these stories for the main characters.
Yeah, because you can't do that to you can't – I mean, for whatever reason, side characters are there to have shit happen to them.
It's like the red-shirted ensign.
Yeah, exactly.
That's their point.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So, I mean, you know, Pixie, whether we like her or not, is not Hank McCoy.
She's not Kitty Pryde either.
Yeah, she's not Kitty Pryde.
Yeah, but
either.
At a time,
who also was sent off to
space. Kitty Pryde's in my top 3 superheroes. Oh no, I said she wasn't.
Yeah, you asked that.
Yeah, I love Kitty. Anyway, okay.
But the thing is, at the time that Kitty Pryde first came out, she wasn't Kitty Pryde.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like,
she, it took a while for her to become a relevant and an important character. So
yeah, but any character does. I mean, you know, yes. Avengers number 4, Scarlet Witch was a reformed villain, and she wasn't revered as she is now. You know, there's.
It wasn't Hawkeye in that issue?
Yeah, yes, he was. All right, enough with the Hawkeye. Seriously, drink.
Now I have to keep doing it.
I know.
It's going to get funny again soon.
First time, not so funny. Second time, with the roll of 3s.
Third time, comedy gold.
Anyway.
15th time, annoying.
16th time, also.
Punch you in the mouth.
Teen Titans 62 was good. I mean, yeah, Wonder Dog killed the twins. Well, that happens. Not the Wonder Twins, the other ones, the other two. Marvin and the girl. Some super friends.
Wendy?
They're in continuity?
Wendy and Marvin, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
And they got brutally killed?
I Wonder Dog.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah, it was.
That is kind of cool.
That sounds awesome. Who wrote that?
McKeever, I believe.
See, you were talking shit about him earlier.
I was talking shit. I just said he wasn't.
I will rip apart the figures of your youth with a dog.
All right. There are six questions from Dave Carr.
Right, light around this shit.
Number one, are there universally good inkers that can enrich any artist? Dave Stewart is a grand colorist. Chris Eliopoulos is a fine letterman. But are there any equally diverse and talented inkers? Or is the inker-artist relationship best evaluated on a case-by-case basis? If so, toss out some good examples of good teams.
Klaus motherfucking Jansen.
Mark Farmer. Rodney Ramos.
Terry Austin. Gary
Jerry Rodney Ordway. Ramo. Terry Austin. Paul Neary.
Yep.
There are some great inkers. Jerry Ordway.
Jimmy Palmiotti.
Yeah. More recently, Danny Meekie.
Andy Lanning.
Andy Lanning, yeah. Yeah, Andy Lanning, in addition to writing Nova, he inks Phil Jimenez's Spider-Man art, and it's fucking awesome.
Okay. Rodney Ramos is a really good one, by the way.
Thank you. I try. I said that.
I'm looking at my two Transmet pages right now. Dudes.
That's the thing about Derek Robinson. Derek has been inking his stuff on the boys, and I love Derek's art, but when he inks his own stuff, it's way too heavy, and Rodney Ramos knew when to pull it back.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Joe Sinnott.
Oh, who's inking you? Mark Morales now, I think, is a great inker.
Yeah, compared to when you was doing it all on his own. Yeah.
But Terry Austin and Mark Farmer, because they work with Alan Davis, that's how I knew that, and Paul Neary. Paul Neary and Mark Farmer worked with Alan Davis, but Terry Austin's also great, too.
Okay. Jimmy Palmiotti makes everybody look good.
Yeah. Okay, cool. In his awesome Talksplode interview, Jay Ferber mentioned some great European artists. This got me thinking about European comics. Any good ones to recommend? I've read Persepolis, but that's about all I can think of. Note, I'm excluding Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman, etc. South American or Central American would be good. French as well. English translations would be nice, but I'm struggling through any good literature that I'll struggle through any good literature there, an online vendor that carries European stuff. So is there any online vendors that carry European stuff? Yes, Amazon.com. Is there any good European stuff? Yes, there is. There's a whole wonderful world of French-Belgian comics that Brian over at Comic Geek Speak does a whole podcast about, and Augie is a big fan of them, and Augie DeBleek from Comic Resources. I don't know much about the Franco-Belgian comics.
Humanoids is one of the bigger names in the publishers there, and they've done a lot of stuff that people like a lot, but I don't really know.
The only
about.
Ones I've read are Tintin. Those are really good.
Yeah, Tintin's great. But South American, I mean, right now, Gabriel Ba and Fabio Moon are the comic book darlings, and they're from Brazil.
What's it? What's the first, second press?
Yes. Gippy.
I gotta turn.
Garage Band.
Yes. Well, Johann Svar is another guy.
Oh, and Louis Trondheim.
Check out. Yeah, exactly. Go check out First Second Press. They put out a lot of foreign books in English translations. And these are guys who are huge. I mean, so much bigger than U.S. guys are here, like in the rest of the world.
Yeah. Cool.
That's a good place to start.
Louis Trondheim. Next question. If you could place yourself in any comic universe during any continuity, assuming it were real, when/where would you go and why? Feel free to create a specific identity within this framework if you want. Or not.
Or not.
That's a deceptively unshort question.
I would be a podcaster in 616 Marvel Universe.
Earth Prime. That's here.
Connor. You'd be in Batman. You'd be working at Gotham Central.
I don't want to be in Gotham City. I'd get killed. I would be in Earth 2 where everything's happening.
Yeah,
nice.
You would be great in Earth 2. That's where you are. Okay. You're a newspaper boy in Earth 2.
I get thrown in jail in Earth 2.
All right. Assuming you had a bad day, which supervillain identity would you assume to annihilate the idiots or the stress and why?
Joker? Because he feels no stress.
Okay.
Joker is he's having a good time no matter what.
Connor?
Mr. Zazz.
Interesting. Whoa. Why?
Because it's really dark. It's the darkest thing I could think of. Darker than the Joker.
Red Skull.
Yikes.
Hey.
Why would you want to deal with all the paperwork?
I know. Well, because I feel
a lot of email to get through.
I feel like as Red Skull is the one that I could identify the most with. That I could really be effective inside the bureaucracy and all the politics in the office place.
So you're saying you identify with the Nazi.
Yeah.
You beat me to it.
Let's assume you have the power to reverse time a la Superman 1. What event, personal, national, international, whatever floats your boat, would you change and why? I'm not telling you, Dave Carr.
I'd do high school a lot different.
I would rewind about 2 hours ago and say, this is a bad idea. Connor?
Yeah.
I'm 31 years old. I think I'd go back.
do some things.
I go back about 10 years.
Yeah. We don't have time for that right now, do we? No, we don't.
Finally, last question. This one is a purely personal indulgent. All three of you have spoken fondly about your college years. Assume that you're in the last leg of undergrad. Is there anything you wish you can go back and do before you graduated? I'm compiling a college bucket list for myself and soliciting suggestions that I know to-do activities before I graduate. And yes, I'm 21, so don't restrain yourself. Okay, do you want a confession?
Yeah.
The last 2 weeks of school or week of school, I went to as many of the girls I had crushes on and told them.
Oh, Holly. Remember the Holly story?
Yeah.
Holly.
Tell the Holly story.
I was in love with Holly and like for years, and she was like the skater chick who.
No, she wasn't a skater chick. She had the look, but she wasn't really a skater chick.
Whatever. Who cares?
She was hot.
When I talked to her, though, it was not as impressive, so I chose to talk to her less. Yeah. Like, there was one semester, I was like, I'm going to get to know Holly. And then I was like, that was a mistake.
Yeah, I remember. I had that same experience.
Yeah, exactly. But she, like, smoked cigarettes and had a husky voice.
Oh,
and
she had short hair. Oh, God.
She was in a doc research group with my wife. And I was like, so did you ever sleep over? She didn't, by the way.
I would not have gotten back together with my ex-girlfriend the last month of school. That's for sure.
Well, then.
Yeah. You have gone back and done. And I was like, Lauren Goldberg and Becca Green. Anyway, like they're listening. So it gets to be like the last day that we're in Park, which is the communication school. And I'm like – and Holly was down in one of the editing suites down there. And I was like – I had to return some equipment. I was like, after that, I'm going to go tell Holly I've had a crush on her for 2 years. And I was like, I was going to do it. You know what I mean? Like, I had resolved myself, and I said hi to her as I was walking by. I was going to do the other stuff and come back down, and I never saw her again.
Yep.
That room was empty.
I rode the train with her a lot the year after school.
Yeah.
Let's see if she's on Facebook.
That was probably too much for everyone listening now.
It probably was. It was really easy to go tell girls you had crushes on them when you were in the middle of a long-term relationship. That was fun.
Oh, I was single as hell at that point. And actually recently dumped and mad. So I was like, whatever, man. And then I got a Green Lantern tattoo.
That's what the end of school's for telling everybody. And then they tell you, oh, you should have told me. And then you go.
Well, ironically, she is not on Facebook.
She probably has a different last name now. That's what happens to girls.
No, but sometimes they put their maiden name in.
Excalibur from Queens, New York. There ain't nothing wrong with Queens. Says, I just finished watching a video episode of Supervillains. I disagree with a thought about Thanos being pure evil because I read Marvel The End in the Thanos issue, which he is not really evil. Besides, isn't he doing the killing because he tries to please Death, get her attention?
Okay, so you're saying that, say that you have this girlfriend who really likes it when you shoot strangers, and you go get a gun and gun them all down, and the cops come for you, and you're standing in front of the jury, and they say, well, should he be killed? You go, I was just trying to impress the lady.
I did it for Jodie Foster.
You guys mentioned Lady Bullseye. I saw a picture of her. Isn't she getting her job done a lot easier since her targets are stunned to see her basically naked and just stand there for her to kill? This also reminds me, you guys didn't really mention any strong female villains in the video show. Or you can just add Loki now that she's female. We totally didn't mention any female villains. That was totally a bad on our part.
Sorry. Are there any?
Sorry. Enchantress? Yeah.
Catwoman's
not a villain.
Sin. Enchantress.
Enchantress, yeah.
Sin's just a red skull and skull under.
You only read like two comics because everything goes back to Hawkeye or Captain America.
It's the only ones worth remembering. You know, the ancient Celts would fight naked so as to stun their enemies. So it's not an unprecedented move.
Okay, fair enough.
In regards to Lady Bullseye. By the way, who no one is ever going to mention again after 6 months.
Right, yeah. It's not going to stick.
Buffy seems to be one of the few that is successful in turning a canceled TV series into a comic book medium. I was wondering if some other canceled TV series that could continue in the comic book realm, I was thinking maybe Quantum Leap, Dead Like Me, or maybe Jericho would have worked. What other TV series would you want that were canceled to be continued in comic books? I don't think very many of life at all.
You're anti the TV show going to comics.
There's a very specific reason why Buffy's successful, because Joss Whedon writes it, has a very strong voice, and he basically wrote those characters. He had a staff, but he led each show. You can't take a show like Jericho who doesn't have any strong central author behind it.
I think that the title of Hating Fun goes to you now. No, you're right. I mean, there's a lot of magic that's going into what's going on Buffy, but it could, I mean, like, you know, if Marshall Herskovitz took My So-Called Life into comics, I'd be very happy.
Yeah, but do you think it'd be any good?
Terry Moore drawing it.
Wasn't there a Quantum Leap book?
Yeah, they're bad. Quantum Leap.
There's been lots. And I remember I bought a S.H.I.E.L.D. comic once. I don't know what I was thinking.
Nick Fury?
That was canceled. We're talking about books that shouldn't have been canceled.
Yeah.
You need to have a strong, identifiable creator behind these books that is also identifiable with the show.
Yeah.
And also knows how to write comics. Joss Whedon just happens to be fitting into that sweet spot of all those things you need. He's one of the people that fits that.
Yeah.
That very, very unique thing. I don't know. I don't know anything. So I
finally, non-comic book question. Other than comic books, I like to watch reality shows like The Amazing Race, Project Runway, Little People, Big World, and World Series of Poker. I always wanted to go on The Amazing Race. Still no luck so far. As for you guys, which competition reality shows would you try? And if you had your own reality show like Kathy Griffin's The D-List or Little People, Big World, what would be the name of the show? What would it be about?
Can I tell them the story, Connor?
Yeah, yes.
So Connor and I are big fans of Big Brother on CBS. And yes,
Gordon as well.
And Gordon is as well. But this is before Gordon got into it. And before anybody objects, yes, it's crap, and yes, it's repetitive, yes, it's we know that, okay?
Love you
know?
It because it's crap.
Right, exactly.
That's why it's so much fun.
You're going to tell me the fucking Project Runway is like Chaucer? Come on, you know, like it's all crap. But, so we like Big Brother a lot, and we were right in that age group in our mid-20s, and they're casting for the next Big Brother, and Connor and I developed this plot where we were going to individually apply to Big Brother and not acknowledge that we knew each other. And somehow we would make it through the casting process and then we would get on the show and then we would work together and win the game. And we never did. We didn't even apply.
That's what you think about when you're 23, that you could do that.
Exactly, that was possible. And then, of course, you know, 3 years later on Big Brother, they introduced when people knew each other outside the house but pretended they didn't, which I think they stole from us, Connor.
Totally, they must have hacked your email.
Yeah, exactly. That's all we're going to talk about with reality shows. Unless somebody has a reality show concept that they would do. I've always wanted to do Urban Survivor.
About myself and what the title would be? Yeah. That's way too much thinking for an on-the-spot thing.
It's actually called iFanboy, and you're listening to it.
Watch it.
Yeah. Next question from Lily. Has your depth of comic book knowledge ever come in handy in an unexpected situation, time, or place? I always wonder if this kind of stuff ever comes up in surprising moments.
No.
There was this one weird time where I used to work in a TV studio that was housed in the lobby of a hotel, and I was walking through the lobby to go to the elevators to go up to the offices, and the security guards were talking, and I just caught a snippet of the conversation where the guy says, one of them was Dick Grayson, one of them was Jason Todd, and the third one was, and without breaking stride, I said Tim Drake and kept on walking.
That's brilliant.
And that's the only time I can think of where it's actually come up in the real world.
I got one like that, except I got it wrong. There was in the office that me and Connor used to work at, there was another dude on the floor. He was a really weird looking dude. And he had giant like black shoes that were way too big, but his pants were too short that made him look really weird. And then he had like that weird 80s comb over hair, like yes. Where like one side's really long
on one side, yeah.
Yeah. And he was just a weird dude. And I hope he's not listening. And he's in the hallway one day on his cell phone going, No, it's an iconic cover. And Superman is holding the dead body of Wonder Woman. And I go, Supergirl. And he goes, he looks at me and he goes, no, the Alex Ross cover. I just left.
Yeah, it's the Kingdom Come one.
Yeah, I was trying to help. And I got it wrong. I went to the crisis and right. I blew it.
Yeah. Damn. I probably do, but I don't remember anything. And her last question is, name at least one movie that you're embarrassed to say that you own or love.
I take pride in everything I own.
I'm not embarrassed to say that I own Crossroads.
I don't
advertise it.
I am embarrassed for you.
Yeah, I'm not embarrassed about anything.
Listen, if you were 22 but... years old in 2000, you saw Crossroads. If you were a dude.
Hells yeah, totally.
I did.
And it was wonderfully awful. I'll never forget that there was a episode of Undeclared, the failed Judd Apatow first year of college sitcom with a young Seth Rogen, and one episode. The plot was actually Seth Rogen and the British character were just getting drunk the entire weekend and they were just doing stuff. And Seth Rogen said, oh, we're going to watch my favorite movie. And he pulls out You've Got Mail. And that led to a lot of jokes about people liking You've Got Mail. And it was sitting on my shelf while I was watching the episode. And I was just like, I own You've Got Mail.
It's a cute little romantic comedy.
It is. Yeah. It's a remake of a Jimmy Stewart movie. Come on. It's
delightful.
Yeah.
I have Steel Magnolias on my shelf, but it's my wife's.
That's awesome. I think I have that too. I don't know. I should.
I've actually never seen it.
Oh, although, you should. It's great. Great Tom Skerritt.
When Harry Met Sally is a fantastic screenplay.
Well, it's a good movie too.
Yeah. I think it won an Oscar for screenplay, actually. Yeah.
You can see my old apartment building in the background of one of those scenes.
No shit.
And You've Got Mail, actually.
Oh, really?
I also love
Hugh Grant comedies.
Yeah, like Notting Hill.
Fine movie.
Great movie, yeah.
And, all right. Okay.
iFanboy is proud to be part of the Windy City Comic Con. Join us on October 25th from 10 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the Center on Halsted. Just two blocks from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. It's all night. Just two blocks from Wrigley Field, the heart of Chicago's Wrigley Field neighborhood. This one-day event will bring together the best comic book retailers, publishers, and creators in the Midwest. The area's best retailers will be offering great deals on new issues, collected editions, statues, games, toys, apparel, and tons, literally tons of back issues. Meet some of the industry's best talent, including Gene Ha, Don Kramer, Mike Norton, Scotty Young, Will Pfeiffer, Bill Reinhold, Jeff Lemire, Rich Kozlowski, Jeffrey Brown, Tim Seeley, and many, many, many more. Book your plans now to attend the Windy City Comic Con October 25th for a full list of exhibitors, guests, gaming schedules, and programming. Go to www.windycitycomiccon.com. That's Comic-Con spelled C-O-M-I-C-O-N.com. Windy City Comic Con, Chicago's only comic book convention.
Very excited about the Windy City Comic Con if we end up there.
Depends on which way the wind blows.
Next question comes from Vicious Smith. A two-part question. 1A, why do you dislike Gail Simone, or rather her writing? 1B, has a Gail Simone book ever been considered for a pick of the week?
Oh, Jesus, run the other way.
Look shiny thing.
I'm not a big fan of her writing, but...
I will...
She's a fine lady. I don't have anything against her personally.
I will say that I am not a fan of her writing either, and as far as I know, a book has never been considered for Pick of the Week, but I read Welcome to Tranquility and Trade, and that was actually really good. Yeah, I don't know what I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't have a feeling about her one way or another, but she's just never written a book that I've been interested in. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. She's never been on a title that I wanted to go get.
Right.
So if she were to take over something that I was interested in, I wouldn't dismiss it because she was writing it. I would give it a chance.
And he's got a second question, which is, I heard you guys hop in a van and solve mysteries in your off hours. How did he find out? So I was wondering if you found out what those black and white images are in the Marvel titles. Signs point to noir, but everything else seems to be speculation. Is this a what-if deal, a story in continuity? What is this?
It was just announced, wasn't it? They just announced it's a noir line of books. I think it's in, like, out of continuity, isn't it?
I think it's out of continuity, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I didn't look at it.
The announcement was just about – they just announced it a couple days ago. I think it's X-Men and other characters in noir settings. It's kind of like a what-if line. Not a what-if line. It's kind of like an Elseworlds line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that sounds like an issue. That would be fun, but not eight-ish.
Well, it depends on the quality of the writing. If it's a good noir writer, then it could be really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think you only take so much noir at one time.
Too much
one
noir.
Book at the back.
I'm sick of the noir.
It's not like you want them all to come out on one week and you get like 12 of them there.
Well, that's true.
Oh, good. Darkhawk Noir.
Ron would buy that.
By 8 copies. Of...
Yeah. Totally.
Damn it, same joke.
This is better. You said more.
Joey from Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm a big fan of Mutant X, the comic book that had Havoc transported into a parallel dimension. But is there any other comic book series like Mutant X out there that I am not aware of?
Oh, Joey. An entire line of comics that DC once existed called Elseworlds.
Isn't Exiles like that?
Was kind of like, oh, the new Exiles hasn't been as good, but Exiles was basically, yeah, it was a lot of X-Men related characters hopping through the different time stream and having different things happen. Go look for Exiles, or actually, if you want, they're not as long as the Mutant X series was, which I love that Mutant X series. I don't know why, it was really cool. Like, Havoc went to this other dimension, Storm was a vampire, it was really cool. It was like a really protracted long What If story. But if you like those kind of stories, check out the old What If trade paperbacks that have been coming out of the old What If issues that kind of explored an alternate reality. Or
I thought you were going to call him Joey Jojo Pants.
Oh.
Just for a second. That's the worst name I ever heard. No!
Adrian, I emailed a few weeks ago about Invincible by Robert Kirkman and how much I enjoyed it. Recently, I found out that he had a run on Ultimate X-Men. I picked up the first volume of this a few years ago and wasn't impressed, but having Kirkman as a writer has intrigued me. Do you guys know anything about his time on this book?
Go the other way.
Yes, it was forgettable.
The entire Ultimate X-Men run has been forgettable.
It's not that there was bad people working on it.
Yeah.
Mark Miller, Brian Vaughn, Brian Bendis, Robert Kirkman.
Yeah, no.
Just shit all.
It's the book that nobody can write, you know?
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
Cotton writes in and says, I was just rereading Top 10 the other day, and I found myself really impressed with the Todd Klein work in the deicide scene in book one. It got me thinking, probably for the first time, about letterers. I was just wondering if there's any series that had a similar impact on you.
Hmm.
That's, I know exactly what he's talking about, though.
And that's really
the first time you notice that lettering is more than just the words.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the book that made me a lettering nerd. I can't get it down to one thing. I'm really trying to think what it is.
I think that one of the things is when you talk about things like that, like when you use a bunch of different fonts to like denote the different characters, it can be overdone really easily.
Yeah.
You know I mean, like you can blow that real quick. And I think that the second that it starts to become confusing or hard to read at all is when you lose it.
Yeah.
And that's the fine line. You know, because honestly, it's really easy to like put wacky font in for the alien.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. And to wit, I think the first book that I really noticed the lettering on was Tom Orzechowski's work on Spawn. Because
which book?
Spawn.
I'm sorry, which book?
Spawn.
Spawn. I was reading it down by the shore.
Fuck you! Come on.
I was reading Spawn. And I looked at the letters.
So Tom Orzechowski, what he did, because Spawn had a stop. I can't even not do it. Spawn. That's so. The word balloons, like when Spawn Talk, they had a specific. I can't fucking control it.
Welcome to Spawn Talk. We talk about gods, clowns, spawns.
Tommy, his word balloons were like kind of italics and had their own kind of font, that sort of thing. And then it was the first thing that really that deviated from the standard kind of comic book lettering font, and that got me noticing. And then from that, I noticed the work of Chris Eliopoulos, I noticed the work of Richard Starkings, I noticed the work of Todd Klein, and you know, and like to see how these guys approach different things and what I like about them, what I didn't like about them. So I'd say it's Spawn.
Chris Eliopoulos needs to write on lettering.
Yeah, he does. That's a good idea.
On lettering.
Yes. Funny. Sam Fryer from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania says, on Sonia Harris's profile page, it says she's a designer and that her comics are tax deductible. I'm about to finish my senior year in graphic design, and I was wondering if she could shed some light on exactly how she manages that. She's not on the show.
We should not give tax advice.
Sonia Harris is one of the writers on iFanboy.com. You can read her on Fridays. Sam, go get you to an accountant or H&R Block or whatever, because if you're looking at any comics or magazines or books that are apply to your work, they can be deducted. Now here's something I learned at a late age. Tax deductible doesn't mean free, or doesn't mean you get the money back. It just means that you don't get you for a certain amount you cannot get taxed on them.
We shouldn't give tax advice.
We shouldn't at all. Go to an accountant. Yeah, go to an accountant. That's my advice.
I know lots of stuff about this, but yeah. I've gotten in trouble. Not saying
that's another
thing.
Show.
Okay, next question from Aaron. I'm a bit conflicted with your show. I love your in-depth reviews, but hate them at the same time. You guys make nearly every comic sound good, and then I have to buy it. Before your show, I'd spend maybe $10 every 2 weeks at the store. Now I spend about $20 a week, and I feel like I have to be at my LCB store every Wednesday. What's LCB? Local comic book store every Wednesday, just as they open the shipment, even though I have a pull list. Anyway, my real question is, whatever happened to Fell by Warren Ellis and...
Nothing to do with it.
My real question, whatever happened to Fell by Warren Ellis and Shrugged by Michael Turner? I love those books. Fell was only $1.99 and always had a great story. Is it that Warren Ellis is too busy with other things? If so, have you heard if he'll ever return to the series? I guess since Michael Turner passed away, that book is pretty much done for also. I was wondering if anybody could carry that book on. It was fun. All right, quickly to address Michael Turner, his publishing company, Aspen Entertainment, is continuing, and like actually Fathom, number one, just recently came out with Pencils by Ale Garza, which actually was really good. I went to a fundraiser to celebrate issue one. I saw some of the art, and I got a copy of the issue. His creations will continue on. That's the great thing about comics, is that creators come, and they create characters and create books. If you like them, another creator can pick them up and run with them. That's good to see. So I bet you Shrugged will be back at some point. As far as Fell, it's not over, right?
No.
It comes out
every 9 months.
Temple Smith's on at least two other books. Yeah. Warren Ellis is writing at least three other books, so it's probably
shame.
Not. I mean,
it's a shame.
I'm guessing it's got more to do with Temple Smith. I mean, who knows if the scripts relate, but like, you know, the artist's got to take on work, basically.
Right.
So he can't wait forever. So he makes a commitment to go do something else. And then, you know, the other project, the Love project, has to, you know, take fall by the wayside.
He did Dead Space, which is a licensed property from EA Games. I'm sure he took that book on because he would make a lot of money on it. Had to put Fell to the side.
But at the same time, he's also doing, he's doing his own stuff, too.
Yeah. But Fell's so good. I hope they come back.
Fell is so good.
Yeah.
Fell's crazy good.
Yeah.
Anyway, Stephen Hereford, a.k.a.
Scootman from Rancho Cucamonga, California.
He gets the best. That's the best credit line ever.
Also known as Scootman from Rancho Cucamonga, says, "Hey, iFanboy. We know that superhero movies were the most popular this summer, yet I'm still reading that comic book sales continue to drop. Why do you think it is that most people just seem content with the movie and don't bother to bask in the comic book glory? Have you tried to get a non-believer to convert to comics?" That's actually what we do.
Every day.
Every day.
And well, people don't read in general.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
And especially don't read comics.
Yep.
And the comic book still has an unfortunate preconception about it. I wrote a whole thing about this.
If you go to iFanboy and search it out, Josh wrote a column about this, which was very good.
Thank you, Connor. I mean, it's been 8 years now. It's not going to happen. The other side of it that shouldn't be ignored is that when the movies come out, the trade sales do go up
right.
a lot.
They do. We've talked to retailers and people. Iron Man came out and people wander in going, "Iron Man?" You know, and Watchmen, Josh, like you were going to say.
Yeah, Watchmen is like way up on the Amazon top list. But what it doesn't create, I think we can pretty fairly conclude, is it doesn't create new monthly readers.
Right.
Some people definitely, but not on a large scale.
Statistically not significant.
It's not like, you know, after Iron Man and Batman, those books each went up 20% in sales.
Right.
Which is odd because in 1989, after Batman came out, that did happen. They did get thousands and thousands and thousands of new readers, so much so that it rocked the industry. But for some reason, between 89 and 2008, it doesn't happen anymore.
Now, I think that there's an important clarification here to make, that comic sales continue to drop in the direct market stores, but we have no idea, we have no insight as comics are doing in like Amazon and Borders and Barnes & Noble.
I think trade sales are probably going up.
And that's the thing. Trade sales and graphic novel sales are booming, you know, but we have no data to prove that. The only data we have is the direct market data from Diamond. So, you know, it could be said that it's going down, but I think it's more the comics is just kind of evolving. You know?
They're shifting from one form to another.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, one of the very basic things is that back in 1989 – When the first Batman movie came out, you could still get comic books, you know, off the newsstand or the spinner rack or at the drugstore or whatever, and they were 75 cents a buck a piece.
It's actually the second Batman movie.
Was it? Whichever.
Let's not discount the 1966 Adam West classic.
Well, sales were booming then as well. What are you going to do to get? Some days you can't get rid of a bomb. Anyway. Anyway, it was just easier to get comics. Now you have to find these ridiculous little specialty shops and deal with the weird miasma of what that place is like. And
miasma. Listen to you.
See.
It's late. I'm starting to be like...
We're at the home stretch. We only have a couple left.
Almost done. All
right, do this thing.
Steve S.C. Siegel.
Selig.
Were the Cable and X-Force series of the 90s really that bad, or is it just that happens to be an easy bandwagon to jump on? Because it represents the excess and over-the-top nature of the decade in which these titles were established. The reason I ask is because many of the characters from said titles are remembered with fondness. Not only that, but the titles sold. You can't mark that up just to speculation either. Yes, you can. Also, Mr. Liefeld serves as the appointed figurative redheaded stepchild in which to beat proxy for the binge that was the 90s, he really wasn't involved with either title for very long. Yes, he assisted in their creation, but beyond that, it wasn't like he was involved in the entire run of either title.
Thoughts.
He's a mid-90s apologist.
There is a section of the run of Cable in the 90s that was written by Joe Casey and drawn by Jose Ladron that I hold up as one of the best runs of the 90s.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Ladron is ridiculous.
It's great. And it was, if you ask me, some of Joe Casey's best work.
That was when he was... I mean, that was the first real book that he had. Yeah, so
it was great. It was really good.
Dude who wants to do a good job.
Yeah. I think he's got a certain point. I mean, I'm the only one here. I'm guessing I'm the only one here who read the entire run of Cable and the entire run of X-Force, right?
I've never read it.
I read a good chunk of X-Force.
You did?
All right. Yes.
And what do you think of it?
Crappy. I'm not going to give you issue numbers because I haven't read them in a while, but even back then they weren't good. And yeah, you can put it off to speculation. That's what sold most of those comics off. That's what sold most of Turok, X-Force.
Right, but hang on. So X-Force is a series that ran from August of 1991 until August of 2002. So 11 years this book was published.
We're talking about a specific portion of the book, not the whole run of the history of its run.
And
that's what the email's about, the bad 90s.
I'm saying, it says here, Cable and X-Force of the 90s, and so that's really, that's 10 of the 12 years the book was published. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, as someone who
also the '90s represents the first half of the '90s. Second half is when it pulled out of that. When people talk about the '90s, they're talking about 90 to 95. 95 right. to on was when comics got good again.
Right.
That first half, that first 5 years, most of those comics were shitty.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I'm not defending it by any way, but I'm saying that my point is that there were moments like the Casey Ledger run on Cable, and there's got to be at some point X-Force was fun to read because I read it for all that whole time period where it wasn't completely awful. You know, to write off the entire thing, I think is it's almost the 90s almost gives a little too much of free reign to dismiss books, which I think is not fair. You know,
no one's saying there weren't definitely glimmers of goodness, and that just goes to show how bad the other stuff was in comparison.
Well, that's not fair either.
It's not like anybody goes like when you're like, oh, tell me about a classic run. Oh, you've got to go back and read the X-Force.
That's fair.
And that doesn't happen.
That was the dead zone. That's the reason why comics almost died in that time.
Yeah.
I mean, the funny thing is, if speculators were all out there buying tons and tons of books and then found out that not only were they buying them as either collector's items, but that they're also really good,
right,
the crash wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Or at least not the same way. You know? Mike from New Jersey, who is the next champion of what? I don't know. There have been a lot of great adaptations by Marvel lately. The Spider-Man franchise, Sans 3, Iron Man, Hulk, and X-Men, Sans 3 again, have all been great films, but why is the Punisher such a hard character to make a film? I've never seen the original, but the reviews are any indication. There's no reason to watch it. But after seeing the Thomas Jane version, it made me believe that actors can play as Frank Castle, but no one can write a good story for him. After seeing the new trailer for Warzone, I'm wondering why you guys think The Punisher can never be a good film. When did we say that? Sure, the action looks great, but the next film looks like the same old junk in terms of story.
Yeah.
Go.
I think the problem is that there isn't a treasure trove of Punisher stories to tell. The Punisher story is his origin.
Yeah.
And they've just told that a bunch of times.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, so it's hard to root for a murderer.
Yeah, yep.
And a really, sociopath.
Also, it's been done. Death Wish did it. That was the Punisher done better than anyone will ever do for the Punisher.
Mm-hmm.
The original Death Wish movie, not the sequels. But
yeah,
the Punisher is, Ron's correct, the Punisher is one story.
Yeah.
His family gets killed, he gets revenge, and then it's just killing criminals. No one wants to watch that.
Yeah.
If we did, it was called Cobra.
It was called every movie in the 80s.
And then we found out that Sylvester's real name in the movie was Marion Cobra, which is why he goes by the last name. Was that a spoiler?
Probably.
It was. Yeah, all right. I don't know. Did we say that it can't be good? I mean, I guess it can't.
I think at some point we might have made a comment like it can't be good for the reason that we just said.
Well, the fact is, you know, it might be entertaining, but it's not going to be like, man, that was a beautiful movie. Maybe it will be. Wouldn't that be great?
It would be awesome.
Like everybody sort of the next Monday after the Punisher movie comes up. By the way, I got pushed back 3 months. That's not a good sign.
That's not a good sign at all.
That's not a good sign at all.
It can't be worse. Can't be worse than Bangkok Dangerous, though.
Yeah.
All right. So our last question is actually a trio of questions, and I guess we'll each take turns reading one, then we'll answer it. So first question is from Chuck Zazz from Downey, Chuck, or known as Zazz on iFamily.com, from Downey, California. He says, "You guys live on opposite sides of the country. I understand that you can phone in for the audio podcast, but I see you guys together a lot on the video podcast. Whose house is the barbecue show at? The video show. Food looked great, by the way. How often do you guys fly? Who's doing all the flying? Wouldn't it be easier for the show if you all lived in one area? Don't get me wrong, you guys are great together, so the efforts are worth it. I enjoy the dynamic between the three of you. How do you work it, and how did the arrangement come about? P.S. I just realized you probably use a green screen. Now I feel stupid. Smiley."
Eddie from Glendale, I've always been a little puzzled by this with the economy being the way it is. I'm especially wondered about this now. I know through listening that both Josh and Connor are based in New York and Ron lives in San Francisco. How is it you guys manage to be in the same room for a video podcast? Do you teleport? Does Ron have to fly over to New York every week? Is Ron rich? Or is it all just special effects?
Doesn't one of you live in San Francisco? Don't the other two live in New York area? You get together to do video shows pretty frequently. One of you's racking up the frequent flyer miles. That's dedication. Bravo. That's from Eric.
So it all basically distills down to the question that everybody wants to know for the past year is how do we do what we do?
Well, we're not telling you. Next.
Yay! 150 episode in the can. Hours of podcast. Jeez, you'd think we were that other podcast.
Oh, ooh. Like, It's getting punchy.
Thank you to everybody who wrote in. We really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun. This is always fun.
And to everyone who emailed, didn't get on the show, thanks for everybody who listens, everybody who watches, everybody who we've met, everybody... Everybody, really. Yeah, Thank you, seriously.
I mean, we've said it in the show that we started doing this for ourselves, and it's turned into something where we get to share it with all of you, and to think that it's thousands of people that we get to talk to about comics is awesome, and so we really appreciate it. And it's all about you. Yay!
I still do it for myself.
Well, yes.
I mean, let's be honest. Who are
I
you?
I do it for the chicks.
Both of them. Yes.
Hey, we had a lot of girls write in for this one.
We did. We actually did. You know, that's the thing is that when everybody says girls don't read comics, like we hear from a lot of women. Either all the women who read comics, yeah, all two of them, either they're listening and watch our shows, or I think there are more girls reading comics than we think.
We should do an all girls email show once.
Okay. Nice. Hot.
And or that's a guy-girl show, Ron. Maybe we should do one of those.
All right. So make sure you go to – if you're not already there, go to ifanboy.com where you can check out Josh's Pick of the Week review of Invincibles as well as all the other comic book discussion on the site. It's a lot of fun. Great writers there like Paul Dini of Detective Comics and great columns from a lot of our friends who are really, really good writers, and they're better writers than the three of us.
Yay. While you're there, click on the store link, and a really innocuous, easy way to help support us is that if you were going to buy something from Amazon, you can click through to Amazon there, and anything you purchase will go directly to helping the site and the show. But also there's the books from that week's show or our recommendations or all sorts of stuff like that.
Every Wednesday on revisionsfeed.com/ifanboy or ifanboy.com, you can find our full-length video show called iFanboy. And last week we talked about comic book villains. And this week we're going into the DC vault.
Into the vault.
Into the DC vault.
Yes. And don't forget that you can check out iFanboy Mini, a daily video show. It comes out Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And also, if you have a TiVo, be sure to check out iFanboy and TiVo. And also, iFanboy is propping up all over the internet where you enjoy video. So if you're a fan of YouTube, or I don't know if you're one of the four people using Juiced or anything like that, you can find iFanboy somewhere where you watch a video. And if you can't find it, let us know and we'll get there.
Yeah, if you like t-shirts, you could get an iFanboy t-shirt. You can go to jinx.com/iFanboy to pick those up. You can send them a picture. They'll send you stickers and things like that. Make sure that we know about it because we like to post that kind of thing. I wear t-shirts, so why wouldn't you want to?
You can email us, just like all these people did today, at contact@ifanboy.com, where you can call us and leave us a voicemail, 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. If you do that, keep the call around 30 seconds and tell us your name.
When you tell us your name, then you can head over to ifanboy.com/about and then be our friend. There's a whole bunch of links to our presence on MySpace, Facebook, Twitter, all that fun stuff. So make sure you head over there and be our friend on whatever social network that strikes your fancy.
A very easy way to help us. Also, I just do the plaintive please. Please help. Yeah. If you're in the iTunes and you like the shows, or even if you don't, but leave a review one way or another to the video shows and to this audio show. Even if it looks like there's lots of stuff there, every one of those helps. That's how people notice whether the show's any good. And honestly, like at this point, we have 150 of these. Thank you, everyone, who has taken the time to leave a review. There's a lot of you, and the amount of goodwill as opposed to just the very small bits of not goodwill is astounding, which is like a theme throughout everybody who's listened to the show for a long time. Yeah. So thank you everybody for that.
Literally over 312 people have left. 312 people have left reviews on the audio show, which is awesome. But we do want to make a call to arms. If you watch the video show, if you enjoy it, go into iTunes. Go to preferably iFanboy, the HD QuickTime version, because we've only got six reviews there. Leave a comment about the video show. The audio show gets a lot of love and stuff like that, but the video show we'd like to see a little love for that as well. So if you like it or if you don't like it, but it helps people find it and helps us out. We really appreciate, like Josh said, all the great words that everybody said for it.
And if you don't do that, just tell somebody else about it.
Yes.
Yeah. Put in your little message board signature on print somebody else's. If you're on ours message board, you don't have to because they already know.
Yeah.
That would be redundant.
And finally, if you like the show and you feel like you want to really help, you can donate some cash to our cause, and you can go to ifanboy.com/donations, or please help us out if you can. It'd be awesome. Thank you.
Yay. 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 So 150 episodes. Can you believe it?
Yes.
A lot of weeks.
I totally just sounded like fucking Troy McClure in front of like a, wow, 100 episodes.
I can't believe we've done this many shows. Are you too happy about it? I sure am.
Remember the time when...
It's not even counting the special edition shows with
We've done a lot of podcasts.
130 minis, 80...
We've given you a lot of content, people. Actually, to be honest, audio podcast-wise, while this is the 150th episode proper of the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, we have actually recorded 183 audio podcasts.
We've done 33 special editions?
If you count all the San Diego ones and, wow, and all the movies and the conversations and interviews and things like that. So yeah, it's we're up to 183. So that's in addition to the 100 and how many minis?
131 on Monday.
131 minis and 87 long video shows. It's a lot of content. It's funny because some of you might have seen Apple when they did their new iTunes thing. We were featured in some of the collateral they used to promote it, which is flattering and awesome. And thank you to Apple if anyone's listening. You know, personal point of pride, I emailed to my dad and he writes back. He goes, "Oh, wow, congrats." He's like, "So you guys afraid you're going to run out of anything to talk about soon?"
Has your dad met us?
And I said, and I wrote back, I said, "Oh, yes." I said, "That happened a year ago."
Nobody noticed.
We've done 401 shows.
Holy cow.
Even on our worst day, I could be like, "Fuck it. Let's do a show about demo. Whatever." That's your Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. right here.
Oh, that's right. It's funny. Good times. All right, cool. Well, okay, so until 151 next week, catch you later. I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Arthur.
Oh, we need a little montage of your voices now, right?
No, we're not doing that.
Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.